ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. Big show we have for you today. Ian Terrell will be joining us in the third hour. We're talking a lot about what happened last night at the GPUSA event as the MAGA Civil War was on full display. We'll show you clips from sort of competing clips from Tucker Carlson and Ben Shapiro. I'll give you my read of the situation. I doubt you're going to be very surprised that Ben Shapiro is literally wrong about everything and should shut up and go away. Spoiler alert, that's basically the outcome. But we'll show you why that is. We got a lot of videos to show you as well. We'll be looking at the fallout from the Australian terror attack that continues to be utterly insane, inverted, and ridiculous. We'll look at what they're doing in the UK, trying to program young boys to be weak and submissive. And we have a whole bunch of other health stuff to talk about as well. Let's begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, folks. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch for Friday, the 19th of December, 2025. The Brown University shooter case has ended in the most bizarre way possible. Brown University shooter found dead, identified as Portuguese national Claudio Manuel Neves Volante. Providence Police Chief Oscar Perez announced that the suspect gunman who carried out the shooting at Brown University on Saturday, who took his own life tonight, was identified as Claudio Manuel Neves Volante, a 48-year-old Portuguese national. He was reportedly found dead inside a storage unit in Salem, New Hampshire, sources told Fox News national correspondent Brooke Taylor. Perez said that a video submitted provided authorities with a description of a vehicle that was corroborated through a tip that was received to the tip center. The vehicle was then picked up by flock cameras, which led authorities to a rental place in Massachusetts and a rental agreement with the shooter's real name. So essentially, we went from several days of having absolutely no information, no description, terrible video that hardly showed anything. For days on end, we got absolutely nothing. Then they announced they had a suspect but didn't announce his name. Now the suspect was found dead in a storage unit. And apparently he's the same shooter that killed the university professor, the MIT professor in Boston. The whole thing is convoluted and really doesn't make any sense. And I'll give you the whole timeline here in just a little bit. But apparently it was a homeless guy with a Reddit account somehow found the guy. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how they caught the guy. I don't believe it. Meanwhile, America 250 plans revealed, the plans for our 250th anniversary of the founding of this country. The Trump administration will host the world's largest fireworks display in the world, as well as a competition, an athletic competition, where one man and one woman from each state and territory will go to Washington, D.C. and compete against each other in a set of games very suspiciously similar to the Hunger Games. I mean, I'm for it. I like it. It's just, why one man and one woman from each state? Why not teams from each state? I wonder. That's a little odd. Meanwhile, Trump refuses to answer questions with Epstein files set to be released imminently, so they will not be released today. They're missing the release date, probably by a couple of weeks, as the DOJ frantically delays the release that they're compelled to do by the Congress. So we'll get back into this a little bit more later, but not a lot of Epstein files being released today, even though they say they'll be released in tranches. They're supposed to all be released today by order of the Congress, but, you know, Congress doesn't actually run things. Meanwhile, Fulton County says 315,000 votes are lacking the sign-off that they were required to have in order to be counted. Well, they were counted without that sign-off, meaning that there were approximately 315,000 votes uncertified, not legally allowed to be counted, but they were. This in a county in a state that Biden won by a little over 11,000. So seems like maybe when Trump was going into Georgia and trying to get them to change the outcome of the election, he was actually trying to get a legitimate election with not 300,000 plus ballots that should never have been counted in the first place being included. So there you go. Finally, we have this. Russia ready to compromise on Ukraine, according to Putin. Russia is ready for negotiations and a peaceful settlement to the Ukraine conflict. However, the ball is now in Kiev's Western backers' court. President Vladimir Putin has said. We'll show you more clips from some speeches he made later in the show. Stay with us, folks.
challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, canceling time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Well, folks, I hate to say I steered you wrong. I was off by literally 1 minute. I said that they have not released any Epstein files. And I look up and I see a tweet from Disclosed.tv. They'd been released 53 seconds ago, it was announced that the Epstein files have been released. And I click on it and it says, you're the first in line, or you're now in line. Wait time is 1 minute. So I now have access. Apparently they are limiting the number of people that can look at this for some reason. It's kind of odd. But here we have the official justice.gov/Epstein library. This site houses materials responsive under the Epstein File Transparency Act. This site will be updated if additional documents are identified for release. Some of the library's contents include descriptions of sexual assault. As such, be advised that certain portions of this library may not be appropriate for all readers. Guys, I'm not sure if you're able to pull up my computer screen, but we might have to just go through this, considering that it literally broke 1 minute ago. From Telegraph, Donald Trump's Department of Justice has begun releasing the Epstein files in what is expected to be the largest ever publication of information related to the pedophile and his high-profile associates. The tranche of documents expected to include court filings, photos, and email correspondence are being published by Donald Trump's Department of Justice, which is under a 30-day deadline to make them public. Hundreds of thousands of documents are expected to be released. However, the DOJ has not published all of the files it holds on the pedophile. Todd Blanche, U.S. Deputy Attorney General, said earlier on Friday more pages would be released in the coming weeks, prompting accusations of a cover-up. Victims of Epstein, Democrats, and a large swath of Mr. Trump's own supporters pushed for the files release, hoping they would expose the financier's links to the rich and powerful. So here they were just released. A wave of files. Our reporters sifted through the documents and will provide updates as soon as they learn more information. Now they say Trump's name will not be redacted. Donald Trump has not requested that his name be redacted from the Epstein files, the deputy attorney general has said. There's no effort to hold back because there's the name Donald J. Trump or anybody else's name, Bill Clinton, Reid Hoffman's name. There's no effort to hold back. We're not holding back because of that. Okay, so there you go. So we now have access to the files here. We're having trouble with the connection to my computer a little bit, but I mean, maybe that y'all can just pull it up on the computer in there and we can go through it, because this will be the first look and we'll have to just do this live. We didn't have time to go through this beforehand because it was published a minute ago. So it looks like there are court records. The redaction of victims' names and other identifying information has been added by the department prior to this production, as indicated by markings of DOJ redaction. Multiple records also contain pre-existing redactions required by applicable law, regulations, and court orders. And so you've got all of these various court filings. Man, there's a lot of them. 2018, 2019, 2015, 2009. So these go back at least to the earliest I'm seeing so far, I think, was 2008. Holy goodness. Yeah, there's a lot to go through here. We're not going to be able to even do this live. We're going to have somebody else go through. So each one of these has, oh my God, 54 PDFs. Okay, so that's the court records section. DOJ disclosures, including disclosures under the Epstein File Transparency Act. So I guess this is the the big one. Redaction of victims' names and other identifying information have been applied. In audio files, redactions of victim names and other identifying information have been implemented through the use of steady, solid tone. So they bleeped out things in the... Well, here you go. Data set one, data set two, data set three. Looks like I'm going to have to download all these. BOP video footage. So what is BOP then? First phase of declassified Epstein files. Evidence list from U.S. versus Maxwell. Flight log from U.S. versus Maxwell. Contact book redacted. That's interesting. Masseuse list redacted as well. All right, so this is looks like the list that has been published for a while, right? This isn't anything new, I don't think. At least it looks like ones I've seen before. But maybe these are new names. So that's interesting. We were told there was no list, but here it's been published. Contact book redacted. Masseuse list redacted. So these would be the victims. So they're all redacted under the masseuse list. It's just a giant black box of 254 names. Yeah, this is, I mean, I guess they're the victims. They call them masseuses, but this is like a parody of, you know, information released from the government. Ah, sure, we'll release the government, or we'll release the information. Here's the documents. And it's just a wall of black, just no text whatsoever. Okay, thanks. Thanks for that. I mean, I guess they're the victims, so I'm not complaining that much, but that's pretty funny. Videos. So BOP, would that be Bureau of Prison? I think that's Bureau of Prison. So here they have the 10-hour footage. So this would be the same camera that they had set up for that they released the footage from that a minute was missing. So now we have 10 hours of the footage, I guess. We'll have to scrub through this. And you can just leave my computer screen up if possible, since I'll be referencing everything from it. Or put it up behind me. That might be more convenient. Okay, so we have the video from the Bureau of Prison. Two versions of the same video. One that's been enhanced, apparently, somehow. And then we have each of the individual ones. So this is the Department of the Bureau of Prison's memo about what's going on. As part of our commitment to transparency, the Department of Justice and Federal Bureau of Investigation have concluded an exhaustive review of investigative holdings relating to Jeffrey Epstein. To ensure that the review was thorough, the FBI conducted digital searches of its databases, hard drives, and network drives, as well as physical searches of squad areas, locked cabinets, desks, closets, and other areas where responsive material may have been stored. These searches uncovered a significant amount of material, including more than 300 gigabytes of data and physical evidence. The files relating to Epstein include a large volume of images of Epstein, images of victims who are either minors or appear to be minors, and over 10,000 downloaded videos and images of illegal child sex abuse material and other pornography. Teams of agents, analysts, attorneys, and privacy and civil liberties experts combed through the digital and documentary evidence with the aim of providing as much information as possible to the public while simultaneously protecting victims. Much of the material is subject to court-ordered sealing. Only a fraction of this material would have been aired publicly had Epstein gone to trial, as the seal served only to protect victims and did not expose any additional third parties to allegations of illegal wrongdoing. Through this review, we found no basis to revisit the disclosure of those materials and will not permit the release of child pornography. All right. Well, I'm not complaining about that. So BOP video footage, they have, again, you'll recognize this. This was part of what they released. And remember, it had a minute missing and they came up with all these weird excuses for why that was. But here you see this is 11 hours of footage, 10 hours and 52 minutes of footage that I guess we can scrub through. Don't have time to do it now. It'll be good to get AI on this. And then you have the individual videos by hour, I guess. They say 300. I don't know why that's included under the BOP video footage. It looks like there's no footage other than just that one camera. So when they talk about all those things. Redactions of victim names. This is Maxwell Proffer. All right. So I guess I'm downloading all these files. I guess that's what we're going to do now. This is the transparency. Oh, my God. So look at this. So 9 pages. How many pages are there of this data set? 13. Well, I could just click last, I guess, huh? Oh, my God. 51 pages of these PDFs. Yeah, I'm gonna need a new hard drive or something to download all these. Should we see what at least one looks like? Okay, so these are photos. Interesting. Should I not open these live on air, do you think? What do you think we're going to see? What do you think we're going to find here? Now, wait a second. These all look like hard drives. Maybe that's just packaging. All right. Do we have any information about what these pictures are? Okay. They really love creepy freaking statues. That's one thing we're figuring out. So I guess, I don't know. Seems like this is a job for AI. Seems like we need to plug all of these into AI and go, tell us the weird ones. Show us the weird ones that we want to see. So we have hundreds and thousands of these pictures. Let me just click ones at random here. I'm not going to be able to go through. There, we almost had some we were not allowed to show. All right, maybe I shouldn't be clicking through. Maybe I shouldn't just be clicking through these. I don't know. I kind of assumed they'd all be safe for work, but that's kind of stupid of me. All right, so we'll have to go through these, and maybe we have somebody in the background digging through and finding things interesting. Like I said, you know, we could do it live here, but it's a lot of information. So that's breaking news here. That just broke a minute before we went live. That all of these have been published. I guess I'll systematically go through and download them all now. That's what we'll have to do. Access denied. Excuse me. I'm an American citizen. These were for me. Oh, we do have some documents in here. It's not all pictures. All right. All right. I'm not going to waste your time just going through this one by one, but we'll have to do that. Interesting. They would wait until Friday afternoon to release this, but I guess that was what they're obligated to do. So now we have all weekend to pour through. Won't that be fun? Apparently there's audio and video in there as well. We'll have to download it and go through it. So that's very interesting to see. Now, what we know about this so far, the DOJ's Public Affairs Office wrote on X that it's releasing a massive trove of documents that the Biden and Obama administrations declined to make public, calling the criticism ridiculous framing. Yes, criticism of the fact that it's not all being released right now. The House passed the Epstein Files Transparency Act 427-1 on November 18th, followed by a Senate approval via unanimous consent that same evening. The bill then went to President Trump, who signed it, triggering the mandated release of the DOJ documents by today. Key Epstein files released this month on December 3rd. We saw the videos and home photos of the private island, but they weren't new photos and videos. They'd already been published previously. On December 12th, you have explosive Epstein photos, shows Trump, Clinton, and ex-Prince Andrew. Again, we, you know, looked through some of those. Nothing too informative there. And now December 18th, new Epstein file reveals sickening photos of women with vile Lolita messages scrawled on their bodies. We looked at some of those yesterday. DOJ insists initial deadline for Epstein files is being met. They ferociously hit back at claims from Democrats and critics of Donald Trump that they will fail to meet the Friday deadline to release the Epstein files. A spokesman for the DOJ responded to a Politico headline reading DOJ won't meet Friday deadline to release all the Epstein files. Ridiculous framing, DOJ wrote on X. The DOJ is releasing a massive tranche of new documents that the Obama and Biden administrations refused to release. So it doesn't sound like they're releasing all of them today, but as we've seen, there is a massive tranche that's now available. And Trump did not ask that his name be removed. So we'll get the full story here. So I guess we'll see more tranches released is what we've heard. But already what we've seen, those are some pretty huge data sets. So I think we'll be able to find out a lot from that. But okay, that was a surprise. I didn't expect that to be revealed the minute we went on air, but there it is. I guess I did know that. I guess they said, I remember reading yesterday that it would be released at 3 p.m. because I remember thinking, ah, yes, finally, I'll actually be able to cover it on air. This would always happen when I would do the morning show. It would be like a major release right after my show or a few hours after it ended. So I was actually looking forward. I didn't actually expect it to be so right on time at exactly 3 o'clock. That's very interesting, and we'll have to go through that. We'll probably talk about that more with Ian in the third hour when he gets in. I'm sure he's pouring through it as we speak. But I want to get back to something that was on the table with the Alex Jones show. TPUSA last night had a big event, and it was a sort of microcosm of the MAGA Civil War, if you can call it that, which if you've been watching this show, you know, it's not as much a civil war as it is an attempt by a foreign state to take total control of the Republican Party in America, in part to, you know, guarantee that they have their own servants in the halls of power. But an additional sort of bonus to this is that the Republican Party itself, as a barrier to so many of the designs of the New World Order, will eventually be destroyed by this infighting that, I remind you, did not come out of the America First camp, who has, for the entire time Trump has been in politics, been anti-Israel. I mean, this isn't anything new. And this is something that, again, I think people need to understand. MAGA was always anti-Israel in the beginning. In 2015 and 2016, before Trump got the nomination, if you went to a place like r/TheDonald on Reddit, it was anti-Israel, because Trump got his start and really made his name in politics. Like, the first debate that he did that he really blew everybody out of the water, the main clip that came out of it was him savaging Jeb Bush and saying, "Your brother sent us to war on a false pretense." And the whole opposition to the Middle East war, a conservative Republican who was in opposition to the Middle East wars, that was the selling point. That was the thing that got him through and made him unique amongst everybody else running for that position. So obviously, naturally, if you're against the Middle East wars, you're probably not the biggest fan of Israel, who tends to be the one who starts and benefits and encourages America to participate in them. But then Trump got the nomination. Then he became the lead Republican. And suddenly, and I just spent a lot of time on the Donald back then, and so that's where I saw it happen, where all the mods got replaced and new mods got brought in, and suddenly it became a pro-Israel outlet. So this MAGA civil war that everybody's talking about is not new. It's existed the entire time MAGA has existed. It's just gone into overdrive with the overwhelming support of Israel that Trump and his associates have been spewing for the last year, and the fact they're trying to get us into a war with Iran, and just the fact that anti-Semitism, so-called, has exploded ever since Israel started to genocide the Gazans in a way that could be live-streamed and shared on TikTok. From Mediaite, TPUSA turns into war between Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson. Turning Point USA's America Fest conference turned into a war between Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson on Thursday, as the two men spent much of their speeches trading blows. During his speech, Shapiro attacked Carlson for hosting controversial guests on his show, including Nick Fuentes and Andrew Tate. Shapiro also attacked the former Fox News host for refusing to condemn Candace Owens amid her ongoing conspiracy theories about the assassination of Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk. Quote, "The people who refuse to condemn Candace's truly vicious attacks, and some of them are speaking here, are guilty of cowardice." "Yes, cowardice," squeaked Shapiro. "You're all cowards." And shut up, twink. Let's go to some of these videos. Let's go to clip number 11 first. This is Ben Shapiro making those initial attacks, and he went first on the stage that night. And I want to, you know, set this up with the reminder that this event was announced while Charlie Kirk was still alive. And Charlie Kirk made the announcement of who would be in the lineup for this event, and Ben Shapiro was not included on that lineup. So at some point in between the assassination of Charlie Kirk and the event of America Fest last night, Ben Shapiro was added to the lineup, added almost specifically to, you know, make this attack, because, again, the Israeli side is the side that's causing the division. Ben Shapiro should not even have been on this stage if Charlie was still alive. He probably wouldn't have been. At least he wasn't when Charlie was alive. Somehow he got shoehorned in here in order to basically condemn and cause division and attack one of the, you know, most prominent and effective and popular voices on the right, Tucker Carlson. Let's go to clip 11 here.
"That actually get at the truth. If we agree with a guest, that's fine, but we should own it. So, for example, if you host a Hitler apologist, Nazi-loving, anti-American piece of refuse like Nick Fuentes, you know, the Nick Fuentes who said that the Vice President of the United States is a, quote, fat gay race traitor married to a Jeet. The person who said that Charlie Kirk was a, quote, retarded idiot. The person who said, and pardon my language here, it's his quote, that he, quote, took Turning Point USA and fucked it, and that's why it's filled with gripers. If you have that person on your show and you proceed to glaze him, you ought to own it. There is a reason that Charlie Kirk despised Nick Fuentes, and indeed even chided Dinesh D'Souza for debating him. He knew that Nick Fuentes is an evil troll, and that building him up is an act of moral imbecility. And that is precisely what Tucker Carlson did. He built Nick Fuentes up. And he ought to take responsibility for that, just as he ought to take responsibility for glazing pornographer and alleged sex trafficker Andrew Tate, or for mainstreaming fake historian and pseudo-Nazi apologist Daryl Cooper as America's best and most honest popular historian. Hosts are indeed responsible for the guests they choose and the questions they ask those guests.
Yeah, so again, you know, if you want to talk about the MAGA Civil War, there's one side that's speaking their mind, the Tucker Carlson side, that has differences with the state of Israel, that, you know, isn't comfortable with the way some of American politics are going, and they're simply speaking about that in a, in my opinion, responsible and effective way. And then along comes Ben Shapiro to call you all evil and condemn you and criticize you for the guests that you have on. It's literally antithetical to everything that MAGA was supposed to be about, but that's not a surprise from Ben Shapiro, who spent his entire career railing against identity politics while being simultaneously dedicated to life for his, dedicated for life to his ethnic cohort. So he's a hypocrite. He's a vile hypocrite who shouldn't have been on the stage in the first place. When Charlie Kirk announced who would be on the stage on the 26th of August this year, it included Tucker Carlson, included Steve Bannon, it included Jesse Waters and Greg Gutfeld, as well as Glenn Beck and a number of other big names. It did not include Ben Shapiro, though, so not sure how he got in on there when this was first announced without him, but he was there to make a bunch of trouble and piss everybody off and cause division, because of course he did. We'll go to some videos of Tucker Carlson responding to this on the other side. But first, let's go to clip number 24. Well, let's go to clip number 20 or 12 here. Clip number 12. This is Ben Shapiro talking about, you know, us, the people that have been right the entire time, where he's been wrong the entire time. Let's watch.
We have a duty to propose solutions. That's why we have to talk about our problems in order to find the solutions. That's what politics was supposed to be about, after all, finding solutions to our common problems. If we speak endlessly about the problems we face, without ever positing a solution other than wrecking the system or centralizing power in a cult-like figure, we are not finding solutions. We are merely making problems worse. Just asking questions, positing vague conspiracies, raving like Alex Jones about the secret confederacies that control your life, none of it makes your life better. None of it. In fact, it makes your life markedly worse. That's because if you truly come to believe that nothing in your life is in your control, you can't even take control of your own life. You despair of your ability to change your own circumstances, and then you fail. And you must not fail.
So obviously completely absurd straw man. Nobody's saying that you have no control or that all of this is outside of your control. Actually, the Alex Jones message, the InfoWars message has been the exact opposite. It's you are the resistance. You do have to get involved. You have to actually fight this war that's being waged against you. Ben Shapiro says not to do that. It'll make your life markedly worse. I don't know. It's made my life a hell of a lot better. I actually met a lot of people whose lives have been transformed in a positive way, because they actually started talking about this and taking this on head first. So Ben Shapiro lying to you because he's a weaselly little liar, man. So we'll get back to the weasel and his lies on the other side.
I didn't plug last hour because I've been so focused on the news. If I don't plug, we won't be here, because I'm not funded by the Qataris or the Israelis or the Russians or the Jews or the Easter bunnies. I am funded by you. So I'm going to sell you products that really work, so you want them. Now, we got two different flavors, Fruit Punch and in Freedom Mango. I didn't name this. It's a very, it looks like a firecracker. It's a beautiful cover. Ultimate power. How about unlimited power? Emperor Palpatine. But it really is a pre-workout, post-workout, Turbo Force 2.0. I mean, this is seriously powerful, super high quality. Everything it does for your body is next level. Ignites mental clarity and focus, cleans, sustained energy, enhance blood flow and endurance, supports daily cognitive function. L-citrulline converts to L-arginine. Don't know what that does. We got the best formula of it. It's amazing. L-theanine Relax, wake up, clarity, and focus. Natural caffeine from coffee concentrated. Vitamin B12, the highest quality, B6, and more. This is really strong. If you love Turbo Force, you're going to love Ultimate Power. We should call it Unlimited Power. I remember Palpatine on the cover. The point is that it funds the operation. I said, hey, we need a clone of this product or make it better for their store. And they said, okay, this is what they came out with. I've been on them for a year to do this. It's really strong. Tiny little scoop. This thing, by the way, is heavy. This is like a whole bunch of servings, like a couple months worth. So get yours now. I like the fruit punch flavor. And by the way, today's the one of the last days where you can get 60% off on Ultra Methylene Blue, Irish Sea Moss, Shilajit, and more at thealexshowstore.com. Thanks for your support. Hour number four, straight ahead. Giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't know, and I'm going over there. You finance it. You paid for it with your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at InfoWarsStore.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air? Can I do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed, two I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King. Make no peace with evil, say Crusader King, and then do like that still image of me. And it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy Unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy in a tube, or you get it for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens for their hats. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you'll be the ones that shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like a Star Trek Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
All right, welcome back, folks. Again, Chief USA last night, as reported by media, it turned into a war. The MAGA civil war exploding for everybody to see. Now, Ben Shapiro went first and had some truly nasty attacks against Tucker Carlson, basically belittling him and talking about how conspiracies don't exist. There's this article written by Ben Shapiro's compatriot, Barry Weiss, at the Free Press. Only cowards tolerate conspiracy theorists. Ben Shapiro speaks during Turning Point's annual America Fest. And it's like, who is this? Who are you trying to trick, I guess, is the question I want to ask Ben Shapiro. Who are you even saying this for? I really don't think you're fooling anybody. What do you mean conspiracy theories, like conspiracies don't exist? You can theorize about conspiracies. Ben Shapiro himself spreads conspiracies all the time. Hell, October 7th was a conspiracy. It was a bunch of Hamas people conspiring to get together in secret to plan an attack. Are you a coward for believing that? I mean, it's kind of baffling to read because this would make sense 15 years ago, this argument was pretty popular back then. Who is he even making it for now? What do you mean conspiracies don't exist? We have literally seen them exposed in black and white over and over and over again. What was Russiagate if not a conspiracy? What was the start of the Ukraine war if not a conspiracy? What was, I mean, just like all of this, stealing the 2020 election? What about COVID-19 itself and the response? They were all conspiracies. Sorry, but like, what are you talking about? Who were you trying to trick? I want to remind you, Ben Shapiro has been wrong about everything. He was anti-Trump in the beginning, right? I still don't think he's pro-Trump. He's pro-Trump so far as Trump does what's good for Israel, but not anything else. He was wrong about COVID-19. He was wrong about the vaccines. He was wrong about the election being stolen. I mean, he's been on the wrong side of literally every single topic you can bring up. And that's the reason why nobody's watching him anymore. I mean, he is cratering completely. Like, he's not even, doesn't even make the charts anymore in terms of like popularity podcasts. He's being blown out of the water by Candace Owens. He's being blown out of the water by Nick Fuentes. He's being blown out of the water by InfoWars. How does he even have a position on this stage? Because where Ben exists is a strata of American politics that is completely separate from the will of the people and sort of has an ability to perpetuate itself and disguise itself with the appearance of popularity when nobody actually likes them or wants to hear from them or believes what they say. So it's a fabricated, propped up class of people that Ben Shapiro is sort of the kingpin of. And it's been this way forever. It's been this way the entire time. I don't think I need to remind you that at the time when Ben Shapiro, you know, Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire, I think Nick Fuentes had a piece about this last night, about Facebook and Daily Wire and how Daily Wire was their number two advertiser for all of Facebook. They were the corporation that was spending the most on advertising on Facebook at a time when every other outlet like InfoWars or Nick Fuentes was banned from the platform. So like, you can't imagine the leg up Ben Shapiro has had for his entire career. And then at a time where he is the most prominent conservative on Facebook, the most prominent conservative on YouTube, because he's allowed to be there and nobody else is, right? Kind of easy to dominate a space where your co-ethnics forcibly expel everybody that's not you. Wow, real incredible stuff, Ben. But then he's the one that's invited to go talk to the U.S. Senate about censorship. Never been subjected to censorship. Quite the opposite. Never been kicked off of platforms. Literally the opposite. Whereas Alex Jones was the target of a systematic big tech wide takedown on one day in 2018 when we were kicked off of hundreds of platforms, including every major social media platform, every major podcast distribution platform, every major advertising online platform. We didn't get invited somehow. Ben Shapiro did. Why? Because it was all a show. Because Ben's in on it. And wants to play the part of the, free speech warrior standing up against censorship. It's a complete lie. And the speech he just gave at TPUSA exposes that. He's not in favor of free speech. He's not against cancellation. He's actually in favor of all of that as long as it serves his actual identity, his actual loyalty, which is to the Jews and the state of Israel, not to America. He himself has made that abundantly clear over and over again when directly asked. And he says things like, my loyalty to America, the greatest guarantor of my loyalty to America is the existence of the state of Israel. Okay, you are a foreign interloper. I think we all recognize that now. So really, it's absurd that he's even on the stage in the first place. Then he's the one that launches the attacks. And then it becomes MAGA civil war breaks out. No. It's not a civil war. We're perfectly fine. Everybody loves Tucker Carlson. Everybody loves Steve Bannon. Everybody loves Alex Jones on the right wing. Just massive, roof shaking cheers whenever these guys come out on stage. Ben Shapiro, not so much. Now, he's still a star in the right wing. There are still people that, pay attention to him and like him. And to be honest, he was a gateway to a lot of people that have now moved beyond his containment operation. But he still, you know, had effective arguments in 2016, 2017 against the identity politics that he ironically has now dedicated himself to. So Tucker Carlson was attacked by Ben Shapiro, is how this actually went. It's not a MAGA civil war. It's a outside force attacking MAGA from the inside. We've just heard him attacking Tucker as well as Alex Jones talking about vague conspiracies. They're not vague. We know exactly who they are, and they like brag about it. See, again, it doesn't even make any sense. This is just a purely establishment talking point. Conspiracies don't exist. You're crazy or a coward if you believe in conspiracy theories. Conspiracies exist all around you. Some are approved by the mainstream media, some aren't. The official story of 9/11 is a conspiracy. The theories about 9/11, also conspiracies. They're both conspiracies. They both involve groups of people organizing, plotting behind the scenes to carry out attacks. That's a conspiracy. So what is he talking about? What he doesn't want you to do is to be able to talk about or discuss the open conspiracies now destroying our rights in a very real and tangible way that primarily come from the ADL, the Jewish lobby, Jewish diaspora, the Israeli-linked control mechanisms that are trying to destroy us. So, in fact, before I go to Tucker Carlson, let me just abolish what Ben Shapiro is saying about a non-existent conspiracy. Oh, these shadowy forces that meet in secret. It's not shadowy. It's not in secret. It's just a conspiracy. It's an open conspiracy at this point. Maybe that's what he's talking about. But I guess, you know, just to disprove him utterly and talk about the conspiracies that he's actually trying to cover up, that he actually doesn't want you asking questions about. Let's go to clip number 22 here. This is Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL.
Now, just last week, leaders of the world's seven largest Jewish communities convened in Australia as part of the 2025 J7 summit. This is a summit organized by ADL as part of the J7 task force to combat anti-Semitism, a convening of representative bodies of the largest Jewish communities on earth.
So the J7, as we said, is comprised of the seven largest diaspora communities. We meet every other week via Zoom to share information, to share best practices. We share what worked for our communities, what hasn't worked, what might work elsewhere. We have shared tips or draft legislation that might work in other countries or spoken of different litigation. A lot of what has been very important has been this consultation where we can learn from each other, learn the trends that are coming in, learn the techniques that others have used successfully, and what might be coming our way. Because what happened in Montreal could happen in Melbourne, and what happens in New York or London or Paris will make its way to Buenos Aires. That's number one. Number two, we do speak in one voice in certain aspects on key advocacy. So for example, when we left Australia, our call to action was on the Australian government to move forward the special envoy Gillian Siegel's plan on anti-Semitism, which has been stalled for a number of months, to accept it and to implement it. It was significant that the leaders of the seven largest diaspora communities went to Australia to show solidarity publicly with the community, with government leaders in the media, and also make this joint call to action. Finally, we have meetings that are some off the record, some on the record with world leaders in which we share our community's concerns and call for action. So it's both a really important body for consultation and learning from each other, as well as an effective tool when we can come together and speak in one voice.
Okay, so article from Information Liberation, ADL, seven largest Jewish communities hold bi-weekly meetings to share tips and draft legislation. Now, this wouldn't actually be that big of a deal. It wouldn't actually be a matter of concern. After all, I'm sure every religion has groups that meet on regular basis to check base, or they hold summits. That happens everywhere. The reason it's negative, the reason this is something that we should be concerned about, is because they're drafting legislation to destroy our rights, to carve out special protections for certain people that don't apply to others, or special, you know, caveats to free speech laws that say, well, certain speech is actually violence and should be shut down. And we'll see how, I'll play you how this is happening, how this is being implemented in Australia in a totally bizarre and nonsensical and inverted way, which is exactly what they're talking about, you know, implementing. So, you know, in Australia, you have a Muslim apparently radicalized by ISIS shoot a bunch of Jewish people at a Hanukkah celebration, clearly an act motivated by anti-Semitism. And yet all of the legislation being presented prioritizes and focuses primarily on the threat of Nazism, that is white solidarity, white sovereignty. So, you know, if they were coming together to write a proposal, a legislative bill to expel all the Muslims in Australia, and maybe that would be fit for a purpose. Maybe that would be an appropriate reaction to an attack by a Muslim person. But when that attack is then weaponized against the white Australians whose policies would have prevented the attack in the first place, you can see where this is not, you know, a group active, you know, actually trying to fight back against threats against their people, but rather being weaponized as a political population, like their population being weaponized to achieve political ends that are in fact contrary to the safety and security of the people they're supposed to represent. Do you understand how little sense this makes and how this is, in effect, a conspiracy? It's a conspiracy to take your rights. People conspiring to come together to utilize mass casualty events, transform that into legislation that deprives you of your right to own guns or to speak freely. It's not good. It's happening all over the world in a thousand different ways. It's death by a thousand cuts. It's completely infuriating. And not only that, but we'll get to another video in just a second of Ben Shapiro talking about young white men and basically saying, shut up, stop complaining. But the reality is, as we showed you yesterday, talking about the Compact magazine story about how white men are discriminated against in a very blatant and obvious and offensive and detrimental way, that was a conspiracy as well. That started in 2014, as the guy in the, who wrote the article noted. And we pointed out that it was the Rockefeller Foundation and the World Economic Forum and BlackRock and Larry Fink and the Rothschild organizations who came together in 2014 and said, this is what we're pushing. This is what we're foisting on corporations from now on. We are going to have ESG, DEI be embedded in our financial system, and we'll give benefits to people who don't hire white people. That's a conspiracy. That wasn't a – and so what Ben Shapiro is doing here is serving the interest of the media, the mainstream media, whose role, as I've explained many times, is to normalize things that shouldn't be normal, to establish, you know, patterns and trends that don't actually exist by extrapolating from a single instance – like George Floyd's death, suddenly that becomes black men are being genocided. No. So it's perception management is all it is. So what Ben Shapiro is doing is telling you all of this stuff that's happening to you, there's nothing you can do to fight back against it. It's up to you to conform yourself to the trend. It's up to you to understand, hey, your government brought in a bunch of illegal immigrants that are now raising the rent prices and pricing you out of your hometown. Deal with it. You got to move now. That was Ben Shapiro's advice. Oh, the factory that, you know, your town was built around that used to employ thousands of people got offshored to China by some major corporation. Well, tough crap. Guess you got to move. Guess you got to go where the jobs are. Right? Nothing you can do about it. Not like you can agitate. Not like you can organize. Not like you can get together and demand things from your government. It's not like you can replace the people in office with people that will serve your interests. No. You are to respond to other people's provocation. You're not supposed to take the initiative. You're supposed to always bend yourself and comport yourself and conform your own mind to the way things are going, not the other way around. So that's what Ben Shapiro's doing. He's telling you it's up to you to get used to the way things are. Don't try to change them. Don't try to interrupt the process as it's proceeding. Don't try to alter the trajectory whatsoever. You have to conform yourself to the way the world is going. And the way the world is going is that it hates you, hates your people, hates your identity and your heritage. And they're systematically depriving you of all of your, you know, inheritance. And your response should be to say thank you and to conform yourself to it. So that's a despicable way of talking. And Tucker Carlson called him out for this. Let's go to clip 26 here. This is Tucker Carlson's response to Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro comes on and unleashes these vicious, very nasty and, you know, defamatory attacks against Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson comes back and basically obliterates him. Let's watch.
I just got here, and I feel like I missed the first part of the program. Hope I didn't miss anything meaningful. But I just want to say, I don't think I did. No, I'm just kidding. I watched it. I laughed. That kind of bitter, sardonic laugh that emerges from you when, like, upside down world arrives. When your dog starts doing your taxes, and you're like, wait, it's not supposed to work this way. To hear calls for, like, deplatforming and denouncing people at a Charlie Kirk event, I'm like, what? This is hilarious. Yeah, this is hilarious. Actually, one of the clips I was listening to myself, thinking as I often do when I hear myself speak, which is never because I never watch myself, but at these events they always play, like, the role of you. And I'm like, that guy is pompous. Woo! Sorry about that. We don't see ourselves clearly. But the prediction that, you know, at some point when Republicans took power again, which I did everything I could, you know, to help, and really felt that was important. I still think, you know, I was right. But I really thought that the impulse to deplatform people, or even to use the word platform as a verb, which it's not, it's a noun, don't steal my nouns, deplatform and denounce. Why haven't you denounced somebody else? The whole, like, Red Guard Cultural Revolution thing that we so hated and feared on the left that we did everything we could to usher in a new time where you could have an actual debate. I mean, this kind of was the whole point of Charlie Kirk's public life. And I think that he died for it. I really believe that. And I know a lot about it because the last several months of Charlie's life were devoted in part to arguing about this event. In fact, this speech, in fact, my speech here, which he asked me to do earlier this year, this summer, and was immediately put under just immense pressure from people who give money to Turning Point. I would assume good people, but who wanted him to take me off the roster. And this has all become public, and the whole thing is so sad that I never talk about it, except to say Charlie stood firm in his often stated and deeply held belief that people should be able to debate, and that if you have something valid to say, if you're telling the truth, you ought to be able to explain it calmly and in detail to people who don't agree with you, and that you shouldn't immediately resort to shut up racist. You shouldn't immediately go to motive. By the way, shut up racist is the number one reason I voted for Donald Trump. And because I'm just sick of it. I mean, first of all, if I was a racist, if I was a bigot, I would just say so. Okay, it's America. You're allowed to be whatever kind of person you want. I'm not. I'm sincerely opposed, have always been, and will always be. But the style of debate where you prevent the other side from talking or being heard because you immediately go to motive, well, I wonder why you're asking that question. I wonder why. Why are you asking that question? I detect in the question a certain evil in your soul. And everyone listening should know that listening to you implicates them. And that they someday may be asked to denounce you. And that friendship is not a reason to defend someone. Love is no defense. I kind of thought we'd reach the end of that. And as far as I'm concerned, we have. And I'm not going to play by those rules. I'm not going to engage in that. If someone doesn't like what I think, fine with me, as long as I get to express it. That's my view.
So that was Tucker's pretty forceful response to Ben Shapiro. And he's exactly right, obviously. Obviously, he's exactly right. I mean, all you have to do is listen to Ben Shapiro himself from a couple years ago talk about the evils of identity politics when it wasn't his group, when it wasn't his identity. He's very clear-sided about it. It's that he's betrayed those values, betrayed those so-called principles that he obviously never held in the first place, and is now engaged in exactly the same cancel culture on the right that we opposed on the left. So there's no MAGA civil war. I'll say it again. Doesn't exist. It's actual MAGA. It's actually America First. And then it's the interlopers like Ben Shapiro, who has been on the wrong side of every single issue, who has opposed Trump every time it's been convenient, talking about DeSantis. 2016, he was against him. I mean, he gloms on to this movement that he was never a part of and didn't help build. and now wants to dictate who's allowed in it. It's unacceptable and ridiculous. Here's Ben Shapiro, clip number 13, blaming white men for their struggles, basically telling them to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Again, just a message that would have been a resounding success 15 years ago. But now, no, we've seen the actual data and the statistics and the outcome of the blatant discrimination against white people. So what are you even talking about? Let's watch.
Ben, we only have a few 30 seconds left, maybe, but question close to my heart. How can we reach young men nowadays, especially young men who are really interested in culture and who they are as young men in a society that really rejects masculinity?
So I think, first of all, we need to remove the obstacles for them. There's a great piece over at Compact talking about the obstacles for young white men in industry. Of course, those need to be removed. The Trump administration has done a great job of fighting DEI, but they need to unleash the DOJ on anybody who is violating the Civil Rights Act of 65 with regard to young white men, for sure. And then we need to say something to young men. Get off your ass and go do the thing. Seriously, stop telling all young white men that all of their grievances when it comes to making basic good decisions for their lives are justified. Those decisions are not always justified. Here are things you can do. Finish high school, get a job, get married, have kids, go to church. Those are all in your control. You pretending that those things are not in your control is grievance culture bullshit. And all the politicians who pander to that sort of stuff are making people's lives actively worse.
Okay, I agree. Go to church, get married, graduate high school, get a job, all very good advice, not doing anything to correct the systemic abuses that white people have been subjected to for the last several decades. I mean, it's not speculation anymore. I mean, we know this has been the case. So why would your advice be accept that? And he says, well, you know, Trump should go after those people. But why should young white men not get involved, not speak up about this? Nobody's telling white men that they can't do anything about it. In fact, white men didn't even need that advice when they were kept out of mainstream journalism. They went to Substack and actually been hugely successful. Ben Shapiro, when you stopped Nick Fuentes, tried to prevent him from having a career, he just went off on his own solo and is now dominating you and mogging you at every possible chance. So what are you even talking about? What he's saying essentially is just keep your head down, you know, pay your taxes, get married, live a small life. Don't be involved. Don't collectivize. Don't advocate for your own self-interest. You know, Ben Shapiro does that. You know, he organizes and he's a part of a wider construct of political pressure to benefit his people. But he doesn't want you to do that. He just wants you to get a job as a plumber and just while away and pay your taxes while Ben Shapiro and his friends, you know, dominate the elite class of, you know, world controllers. You don't have to do that. You don't have to accept that. Ben Shapiro is gaslighting you because he's a liar.
I didn't plug last hour because I've been so focused on the news. If I don't plug, we won't be here because I'm not funded by the Qataris or the Israelis or the Russians or the Jews or the Easter bunnies. I am funded by you. So I'm going to sell you products that really work so you want them. Now, we got two different flavors, Fruit Punch and in Freedom Mango. I didn't name this. It's a very, it looks like a firecracker. It's a beautiful cover. Ultimate power. How about unlimited power? Emperor Palpatine. But it really is a pre-workout, post-workout, Turbo Force 2.0. I mean, this is seriously powerful, super high quality. Everything it does for your body is next level. Ignites mental clarity and focus, cleans, sustained energy, enhance blood flow and endurance, supports daily cognitive function. L-citrulline converts to L-arginine. Don't know what that does. We got the best formula of it. It's amazing. L-theanine, relax, wake up, clarity and focus. Natural caffeine from coffee concentrated. Vitamin B12, the highest quality, B6 and more. This is really strong. If you love Turbo Force, you're going to love Ultimate Power. We should call it Unlimited Power. I remember Palpatine on the cover. The point is that it funds the operation. I said, hey, we need a clone of this product or make it better for their store. And they said, okay, this is what they came out with. I've been on them for a year to do this. It's really strong, tiny little scoop. This thing, by the way, is heavy. This is like a whole bunch of servings, like a couple months worth. So get yours now. I like the Fruit Punch flavor. And by the way, today's one of the last days where you can get 60% off on Ultra Methylene Blue, Irish Sea Moss, Shilajit, and more at thealexjonesstore.com. Thanks for your support. Hour number four is straight ahead.
back, folks. Second hour of the War Room is on. I'll be joined by Ian Carroll in the third hour. We have a lot to cover in the second hour, and I think I'm going to move on to what's happening in Australia, because truly it is emblematic of, I don't even know how to describe. I mean, it's just madness. It's just pure unrelenting madness from these countries, whether it's UK or Germany or Australia. I mean, they are so brainwashed, it's hard to even fathom. I mean, you have two Muslim guys, father and son, apparently radicalized by ISIS, have an ISIS flag in their car, carry out an attack on Bondi Beach. The next day, or a few days later, rather, you have a car full of people arrested, apparently on their way to commit another terrorist attack. Now, those people have been released, and the laws that Australia is implementing would do absolutely nothing to prevent an attack like this in the future. And in fact, they are using this attack as an excuse to crush the nationalist sentiment that is directly opposed to the, you know, growing threat of Islamic terror. The Australian government can't even say Islamic terror. They can't even act like that's a threat that they have to deal with. They're so hamstrung by their own political correctness that all they can do is go after Nazis. It's like that's the only response they have. Even though Nazis didn't carry out this attack, and Nazi, you know, immigration policy would have prevented it, it doesn't matter. It's like they don't know what else to do. They're like ill-programmed robots that just have one response to whatever input gets put in. Let's go to clip number three here. This is some Australia propaganda being pushed on the populace. Again, Muslims shot Jews. Now let's watch a bunch of Australian celebrities tell white people to shut up. Let's watch.
Enough.
No more division.
No more hate.
No more racism.
No more anti-Semitism.
No more Islamophobia.
This country is built on diversity.
On fairness.
On respect.
Everyone is equal.
Everyone deserves to feel safe.
Hate is where it starts.
Here is where it stops.
It's time to stand up to hate.
Stand up to hate. Okay, great. You did it. Well done. Big swastika there. Time to stand up to hate. No more division. No more Islamophobia. I'm sorry, did an Islamic person not just slaughter 16 people on your beach? Do you not just permanently scar the face of Australia forever? You know, Bondi Beach used to be iconic as a beach. Now it's iconic as the place that a bunch of innocent people were slaughtered by a pair of Islamic radicals. What are you talking about? What do they think they're fighting against? And I gotta say, it must be amazing to be an Islamic radical. I mean, really, it's gotta be the greatest thing ever. You get to attack whoever you want, and then the government punishes your victims. It's amazing. It's a win-win situation. It's actually a message that the Australian government is sending to Islamic radicals. If you attack our people, we will crush our people. All of these so-called racist Islamophobes that are simply Australians that don't want to be murdered, don't want to have their country sold out from under them, they're the ones that are going to be subject to the repression should you go out and kill a bunch of them. That's the message that's being sent. Is not only will you be able to kill some of them, that makes it an effective terrorist attack on its own, they will actually then implement restrictions against your enemies so that all of the white Australians advocating against immigration, advocating against the usurpation of the Australian people by foreigners, they'll actually be punished. They'll actually be silenced, and your side will actually benefit from attacking people of Australia. That's the message is being sent now to the Islamic radicals. It must be amazing. It must really be great. You get to attack, and then your side gets protected. You get to slaughter people, and the people you slaughter get punished. It's really an amazing, you know, signal to be sending to these groups.
challenging all of you to support the broadcast, keep us on air while you get great products, and it's a win-win. We need funds, we are in the red, and we've got to be able to continue our legal battles. We've got to be able to continue to buy a new product going in the future. We've got to continue with the funding to build the Alex Jones backup network in case they're able to shut us down. I cannot do it without you. So now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com and do your final Christmas shopping there. Anywhere in the United States, if you order by Friday, you will get it before Christmas. So get your orders in now. Do your Christmas shopping with us, but really give yourself the gift of health with our creatine gummies, the highest quality type of creatine, 5 milligrams. That's a daily serving per gummy. Huge container of them. Such a great deal. This is the best creatine out there. There's so many other great products and a whole bunch of other sales and deals. You can become a subscriber right now on any product, cancel any time, and it reorders every month and get 50% off on all future orders. The widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, ball caps, sweaters, many of them limited edition at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're watching The War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. Please do share those links. Make sure you're following us on X. You can follow me at Harrison H. Smith. Make sure you're following. I got a couple of messages today from people going, this is the third time I've had to follow you. And I'm constantly watching my follower count go up slowly and then drop down by a couple hundred, then build up slowly, then drop down. So make sure you're following us. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. You can follow Alex at Real Alex Jones. You can follow InfoWars at InfoWars at AJN Live. Just make sure you're following us for updates no matter what happens. And that's the easiest and best way to support us. Just sharing the links helps get the word out and really does help. But we've got other ways to support us. And in fact, we have new products available at thealexjonesstore.com, which you have been waiting for. Our audience has been waiting for this. I know, because it's probably the most requested supplement I get asked about. Turbo Force. People loved Turbo Force for good reason. And there's a reason that energy supplements are so powerful. It's probably like the number one complaint people have. They don't have enough energy. Well, if you're just trying to make up for that by chugging energy drinks, you're really just delaying the inevitable crash. Not with unlimited power from the Alex Jones store, Alex Jones Naturals. Unlimited power, energy plus focus, blood flow and endurance. Unleash your potential. We got a couple of great flavors. Freedom Mango is this one. Then we have Fruit Punch called Patriot Punch. Unlimited power is the name of the new supplement. And in fact, this stuff is so powerful, we actually had to put warnings. Suggested use is just one scoop daily. And then in big, bold capital letters, do not exceed 2 scoops daily. See, if we were just going for profit, we'd make a much weaker product. And then we'd say, do 3 or 4 scoops a day. And then you'd use it quicker. And then you'd have to buy it. And it would cost us less because, you know, our overhead would be less. We use less powerful, supplementation. But that's not what our focus is here. Our focus is getting you the best product on the market. So that's what we did. Freedom Mango, Patriot Punch. So powerful, we actually have to ask you not to take it all at once, not to chug it all as quickly as you can. It's actually that powerful. You need to take it as directed. There's a month's worth of power in here. And again, I know that Turbo Force was just an incredibly popular product that would sell out immediately. I imagine this stuff will sell out pretty quickly as well. So you're going to want to try it as soon as possible. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. Ultimate power, energy, and focus. And I keep talking about, you know, New Year's coming up. You're going to need to get the supplementation required to fulfill your resolutions. Well, this is the stuff. This is what you need. This will get you through whatever struggles you have in 2026. Ultimate power, energy, and focus. Really incredible stuff. I'm going to have to try some later this hour. I'm going to have to get a scoop myself because this stuff's brand new. I haven't even had a chance to try it. But as you may know, I'm a regular consumer of our supplements, as are most people at InfoWars. You know, we have we have products all over the place, but specifically in my office, there's this little shelf with all the products, and everybody in the office comes strolling through at least once in the day, picking up, you know, all the supplements they want. A little pick-me-up midway, you know, in the afternoon. We won't sell you things that we don't use ourselves. We don't sell you things that are ineffective, just like we don't tell you things that are untrue or would hurt you. Like, this is so simple. It's so obvious. It's just everybody else is trying to scam everybody. And so it's actually like unique when a place like InfoWars is just straightforward and it's just like, we're going to tell you the truth. And then we ask you to go support us. It really is as simple as that. And if you don't support us, we'll go away. And if that's what you want, don't support us. If you want us to be here, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself some ultimate energy. Help yourself and help us and keep us on the air as we continue to be the solid rock in these ever shifting tides. Like InfoWars, you can look up footage from Alex Jones from the 90s. Or you can look up the very first shows I did on American Journal in 2021. We're saying the same stuff that we're saying now because the battle has changed a little bit, but the fundamentals are the same. The people that we're fighting are the same. The trends that we're trying to stand against are the same. So as everybody talks about the MAGA Civil War, Tucker Carlson, Ben Shapiro, why don't you just go with the guys that have proven they have a track record of success, proven that we've been on the money and on the ball on all these different topics that for years and years and years, we were the only ones talking about. I mean, if you look at the new MAGA coalition, it's really the InfoWars, the Alex Jones coalition. When you have RFK Jr. and the anti-vaccine movement combining with the, you know, anti-Islamic, anti-immigration sentiment of the more, you know, establishment MAGA, like it's InfoWars. We are the ones who have set the trend. We are the ones who have blazed the way and blazed the trail. And we've been dead set on everything. We've been exactly right about everything because we have sort of the truth and the founding fathers as our guiding light. And it's hard to get knocked off course when you have such a solid foundation to pursue. And of course, we understand that everything that's happening in the world, pretty much, it doesn't just happen, right? And that's why I always say makes you a conspiracy theorist is the simple understanding that things don't just happen. America didn't just become majority non-white by accident, on a whim, you know, like it's sunny one day, it's cloudy the next. Who's, you know, who can say what causes that? Or the dew appears on the grass in the morning. It just happens, you know, nothing you can really do about it. You just have to, you know, not walk on the grass in your socks like that. You just have to conform to the reality because it just appears, the dew just appears. Well, that's not the case with geopolitical reality. That's not the case with, you know, immigrant populations coming into your country. Like, people make those decisions. These are choices that are being made. This isn't random. This isn't spontaneous. These are the desired outcomes of the planners that put these operations in motion. Once you understand that, you're a conspiracy theorist. And that's the thing to understand. There's a reason why white people have been discriminated against so effectively and brutally. And it has nothing to do with history or slavery or equality at all. So don't fall for that. And when it comes to Australia, it's been made abundantly clear that it doesn't matter, you know, what the reality on the ground is. It doesn't matter who carries out the attack. The people that will be punished for it are the white Australians. And that's just the way it goes. It's again, a decision being made. It's not an accident. It's not spontaneous. It's not based on logic or reason. It's not an inevitable outcome of a series of events. It's actually completely arbitrary and totally nonsensical, but they're doing it anyway on purpose because they have designs that are greater than what they're telling you. They don't actually care about, you know, the people of Australia being safe. If that was the case, they'd probably do what Israel did after October 7th. I don't know if you remember this, or hell, what Ukraine did after the invasion of Russia. See, when you actually want to protect your population from, you know, imminent attack, what did Israel do after October 7th? What did Ukraine do after the invasion of Russia? They handed out guns to all of their citizens. That's what you actually do if you want to make your citizenry safer. You arm them. Look it up. Israel was handing out M4s or whatever gun they use by the box load. Everybody in the country just got to stand in line, walk up, grab a gun, go home. That's what you do if you want to protect your people. That's what Australia would be doing if it wanted to protect its people. It's doing the exact opposite. It's actually engaged in another round of massive gun control, gun confiscation and destruction. Even though they have the strictest gun control maybe in the entire world. I mean, the guns hardly exist in Australia after 1996 and a major, you know, shooting massacre then. Now they're doing another buyback, which it's like, okay, the only, yeah, here, this is what you do if you actually want to protect your people. This is actually a country that cares about its own people, is worried about threats from outside. And so what are they doing? Handing out machine guns. That's what a country that really wants to protect its people does. Australia is doing the exact opposite. Let's go to clip number four here. Australian PM Albanese says hundreds of thousands of firearms will be collected and destroyed, obviously all from legal gun owners. And if you're a legal gun owner in Australia, it means really you like don't even have a traffic ticket. Like to get a gun in Australia is extremely hard. So it's those people that have like perfectly clean records and totally complied everything that the Australian government demands. They're the ones that are now being asked to turn in their guns because some random radical immigrants decided to shoot a bunch of people. Here's Albanese.
We expect hundreds of thousands of firearms will be collected and destroyed through this scheme. Consistent with the approach that was taken in 1996, the government is proposing that states and territories will be responsible for the collection, processing and payment to individuals for surrendered firearms. The Australian Federal Police will then be responsible for the destruction of these firearms.
I'm sure that'll work. I'm sure this will work so incredibly well, just like it did back in 1996, right? You know, that's not the only restriction they're imposing. We'll get to some more in just a second. But again, you have to ask yourself, are they even capable of dealing with the actual problem? And as far as I can tell, they are incapable of even recognizing or acknowledging it. Let's go now to clip number seven here. Prime Minister, in this same press conference, is asked if radical Islam is the greatest domestic terror threat, and he can't answer. Let's watch.
To follow on Ruben's question, is radical Islam, in your view, the greatest domestic security threat Australia faces?
Well, the assessments are that that is one of the issues that we're dealing with. But I want to deal with all of the threats, whether it be extremist perversions of Islam leading to support for the ideology promoted by ISIS, whether it be also concerned about the issue of sovereign citizens killing police in Victoria and Queensland. I'm concerned about neo-Nazis thinking it's okay to march down our streets dressed in black, not worrying about their faces being covered, explicitly promoting that as well. Some of these things are not new. James Salim, National Action Person, tried to kill Eddie Fundy from the African National Congress when I was a student. I was a candidate against that reprehensible fascist at Sydney University in 1983. This has been around a long period of time. There are issues have escalated, and we need to take action against all of them.
See, I think we have an insight into his mentality there. Yeah, it's not 1983 anymore, old man. What are you talking about? Like, I remember in 1983, there was a fascist I was running against in school. So now that we got 16 Australians slaughtered on a beach by a Muslim, all I can think is, this reminds me of Africa. And it's the Nazis that are the problem. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? What are you talking about? So again, he's like, yeah, you know, if it's like a perversion of Islam, right? You can't even say it's Islam. It's like, it's if you take the perverted form of Islam, then that's bad. But, you know, sovereign citizens bad, Nazis walking around in black. I mean, you know, you tell me which is the biggest threat, the mass murderers or the guys walking around in black. Okay, I know who I'm scared of. Australia announces gun buyback scheme in the wake of Bondi attack. New South Wales is also effectively banning protests for up to 3 months as the premier links Gaza rallies to Bondi terror attack. New South Wales Premier wants Parliament to grant his government extraordinary powers to effectively ban protests for 3 months, claiming the implications of pro-Palestine rallies could be seen in the Bondi terror attack that killed 15 people. Chris Minns on Friday said when a terrorism designation was in place, the police, with the agreement of the minister, will be able to declare a specific area where public assemblies are restricted for a period of time. This might be in part of the state or all over the state. No public assemblies in designated areas will be able to be authorized, including by a court. They also have apparently denied a request to hold a memorial for the victims of the Bondi Beach shooting near the mosque where the shooter was radicalized. And the official response from the Australian government, when asked by a group, hey, we want to do this memorial and we want to do it near the mosque where the guy was radicalized, they said, no, we can't guarantee you safety. We're not going to give you permits to do that. Because they can't guarantee the safety. Because when it's Muslims who are going to attack people, again, the, I don't know what it is, political correctness, the hypnotism that these people are, the time warp that keeps them stuck in 1983 South Africa. Like, these people are morons. I don't know what caused it, but like, you have to understand, at the base of it, at the very core of what's going on here is that the Australian government, just like the UK government, are scared of the Muslims. The Muslims have decided that, you know, they get to commit violence if the government opposes them, and the government is scared to oppose them. They're happy to go after the neo-Nazis because they know the neo-Nazis are going to abide by the law. They know the neo-Nazis are compelled by the virtue of the media landscape to be on their best behavior at all times and never give anybody an excuse to, you know, call them violent. Meanwhile, the Muslims know they can do whatever the hell they want and the government cannot condemn them, cannot oppose them, will not even step in to prevent them committing violence. If you know, it's upholding the Australian character that they're so worried about, then you have to physically intervene to stop the attacks by the Muslims. But the Australians are saying, no, actually, they're going to attack, therefore, we're not going to let you gather. Yeah, this is a video from COVID showing you what the Australian government is capable of. When they want to do something, they are absolutely ruthless, brutal, beyond explanation for people that don't want to be locked away in a COVID camp because of the flu. Or be forced to take a vaccine that they now admit destroys your heart muscle. So it's just the same thing over and over and over. They've wanted these laws since COVID. They've wanted an excuse to crack down on this stuff since the protests during COVID. And now, even though it was a Muslim attacking, they're not going after the Muslims. They're not even, you know, allowing the Australians to protest outside of the mosques, saying basically the Muslims are going to attack you and that's your fault. Australia's reluctance to confront radical Islam may force Jews out. Decisions on policing, prosecutions, and hate speech enforcement are increasingly seen as a test of whether Australia can keep Jewish communities safe. So this is where it gets really crazy. This is where it gets to the point that it's like hard to not recognize what's going on here. Let's go to clip 29 here. Actually, before we do that, let's go to clip 9. Just finish up. This is a quick clip. This is a New South Wales police commissioner, Mal Lanyon. So yesterday, 7 men were arrested in a car on their way to Bondi Beach, apparently. I'd heard they were arrested with weapons in the car. That might not be true, but they've been released now. So as people had their car rammed by police, they were hauled out, arrested, and they've now been released. So why were they arrested in the first place? Let's go to New South Wales Police Commissioner explaining why they let these guys go.
The information received was that Bondi may have been one of a number of locations that the males were intending to attend, but the reason for attending is unknown. The justification for their ongoing detention no longer exists, subject to a review of evidence. They will continue to be monitored whilst in New South Wales, and we will work closely with our Victorian and Commonwealth law enforcement partners.
All right, so no reason, basically, but they're you know, hamstrung by, you know, these laws that say you can't arrest people, you know, and keep them without a reason. I mean, unless they're like a Nazi, like a white person, then, you know, laws don't count. New South Wales police just rejected our application to hold a vigil for Bondi victims outside Al-Madina Dawa Center, the extremist mosque in Western Sydney that radicalized the Bondi shooter. Police told me on the phone that they could not protect us from the local community if we organized the vigil. So they reject this attempt to gather. So, you know, they say like, oh, we're going to shut down. We're not going to have any protests because, you know, we think the radical Islamists protesting in favor of Gaza led to the Bondi attack. But then they're actually stopping Australians from holding a vigil for the people that were killed because they know that the Muslims will attack them and they don't want to have to defend them. So that's kind of horrifying. Meanwhile, the BAC, the British Australian community, condemns Australians being blamed for an imported crisis imposed upon them. The British Australian community expresses its deepest heartfelt sympathy to all those affected by the tragic massacre that happened on December 14th, 2025 at Bondi Beach in Sydney. At the same time, we insist that the government representatives, media outlets, ethnic lobbies, and social media commentators refrain from language which defames or transfers blame to the for the event to traditional Anglo-Celtic and European Australians. We say this as articles are appearing all over the legacy media, like a recent one from SBS quoting PM John Howard, who warned that a federal push to tighten gun laws risked being a diversion to countering anti-Semitism by describing the attacks as being motivated by or a consequence of Australian anti-Semitism or even simply anti-Semitism is misleading and implies culpability of communities who have no connection with the horrific attack. This is where it gets really crazy. Let's go to clip number 29 here as we see that while they're doing a gun buyback and they're basically trying to get rid of all guns in Australia owned by private citizens, not so much the case for certain people. Let's watch.
I think there is an argument for the Jewish security, the CSG, to have weapons so that they could respond to serious threats like this.
Yes, I do. Now, CSG have been in discussions with the New South Wales government in the last 24 hours. They're given permission at Jewish places of worship, Jewish schools, to be armed on site. But we're in discussions with them about events, Jewish events in particular. Now, there needs to be what's called a de-escalation protocol. I mean, it's specific tactical approach because if there are guns on site and police approach the scene, we need to be in a situation where everybody is safe. The CSG, the Jewish community, members of the public and police. But I'm confident we can work our way through that.
See, what did I say? If you actually care about a group of people, after an attack, you arm them. You give them guns. So while they are simultaneously demonizing native Australians, demanding that they take their guns, they're actually making legal loopholes and allowing solely and explicitly Jewish groups to be armed. Anybody see an inconsistency there? Anybody see the setup for a bifurcated population where only certain people are allowed to defend themselves, only certain people are allowed to protect themselves with weaponry, whereas the rest of the population has to be subject to attack, is not allowed to defend themselves, and if they even speak up about it, they'll be arrested on claims of anti-Semitism. Chris Minns, this is the premier of New South Wales, open to arming Jewish security group with links to Israel. A local Jewish security group could soon be allowed to carry weapons in Sydney as the New South Wales government considers options in response to the Bondi massacre last Sunday. The New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, was asked by Sky News reporter on Tuesday if there's an argument for the Jewish security, the CSG, Community Security Group, to have weapons to respond to serious threats, to which Minns replied, yes, I do want that to happen. Okay, so white Australians being disarmed, Jewish Australians being given new rights to own more guns to protect themselves.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nitric Boost, the all-time fan favorite, is now back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
You've looked at our formula. You like it?
I did, and I do. Yes. Well, nitric oxide is a key. It's made by our own bodies again. It's made by L-citrulline and L-arginine, the amino acids.
And now, a major shipment has finally come back in for those of you that want to be able to stock up on it at InfoWarsStore.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Judy Mikovits, without me even knowing she'd gotten it and used it, came on years ago and said, This was the best spike protein detoxer she found.
Just like you want your own body to make vitamin D from the sunlight, you can't force it back in people who can't make it. It can actually hurt them. It's called peroxynitrites. So you want to boost your own body's ability. The nitric oxide relaxes the endothelium, the vasculature. It relaxes the vein. So I use the two, your InfoWars. I keep that on my shelf, and I feed myself the Cardio Miracle, which is just for straight food. It's a different formulation than that one, and the two together are a 1-2 punch. So you get in your food the ability to make what you need and no more.
Because of the organic-based compounds that are in it that cause vasodilation in the blood vessels, in the arteries, in the veins, in the capillaries. And it just does so many other great things.
So constricted blood vessels too, because athletes are running, they're constricted, they're working so that the blood flows and it doesn't flow, which is why your nitric oxide product, that new product, I hope you'll show it, because that's a very important thing to have for acute events. Dissolve under the tongue, give you an instant relaxing of your endothelium, your vasculature.
Now listen, it is already a nationwide best-selling bodybuilding product for over 20 years. Bodybuilders take this, it helps grow muscles and better workouts and things. I was just researching and wanting to put something out that was good for the heart and talked to a lot of scientists and researchers I knew, and they said, well, these are the type of ingredients we were thinking about putting out a product. When I talked to formulators, they said, well, we actually already have a product that has that, so we private labeled it as Nitric Boost. And just for men in the morning when you wake up, that's the big thing people feel and see right away. So imagine what else is doing for your body. So for those of you that love Nitric Boost, it's back in stock right now at InfoWarsStore.com. And for those that haven't tried Nitric Boost, you are really missing out. Secure your Nitric Boost right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We're battling in the courts. We're still here a year after The Onion said they bought us. We might actually hold on and win. But regardless, the shopping cart's there. The shipments are going out, and you will get your product. But if you don't order it, support us, we'll be off the air. So it's a paradox. So please take action now at InfoWarsStore.com and experience Nitric Boost for yourself. And listen, men feel it in that one way. Women love it as well. It's good for men and women. Get your Nitric Boost now, right now, exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. And thanks for being the reason, one way or another, we'll always be on the air. InfoWarsStore.com, Nitric Boost, back in stock.
Come to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster.
Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision.
Down with the globalist. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
G'day, Australia. Within hours of tragedy, I convened National Cabinet, and together we've identified the real problem. Law-abiding citizens still have too many freedoms. So as of today, we are fixing that. Five new very important restrictions on people who did nothing wrong. Because when evil acts, the good always get punished. It's like banning cars because someone drove drunk. See, that is logic. So we could ask the hard questions about extremism. We could examine our intelligence failures. We could wonder why warning signs were ignored. But that would mean admitting that we failed. So instead, let's blame objects. Objects can't vote. Objects can't call us incompetent. Objects are perfect scapegoats. When extremists chant for violence, we call it peaceful protest. When they burn our flag, we call it expression. When tragedy strikes, we call it a gun problem. That's not cowardice. That is cowardice. The solution? More paperwork. Because criminals famously obey paperwork. Here's what we're not doing. Asking why people become radicalized examining which extremist ideologies we've been too scared to confront, admitting that maybe the problem isn't the tools, but the hatred behind them. But here's what we are doing. Press conferences. More press conferences and inappropriate and tasteless hospital photo ops with wounded heroes. Our poor bloke shot multiple times and his reward, having to shake hands with me and the Premier for the cameras. His pain, our photo opportunity. That's democracy. Some would say that we're using this tragedy for political theatre, that we'd rather appear to act than actually act. Well, they're right. But look how busy we appear. Your government acting swiftly on the wrong thing since forever. G'day, Australia.
Brilliant. From Rupert_Degas on Instagram. Yeah, that's basically it. We've decided the easiest thing to do is to go after the law-abiding citizens who won't try to stop us, won't oppose us in any way, have been conditioned to accept our abuse. They're the easy ones to go after. Not those radical Muslims with the weapons. They'll put up a fight. Absolutely incredible stuff. And again, it's worldwide. It's the same in Australia as it is here, as it is in the UK. It's pretty astonishing how long this has gone on. But I think we're getting to the end of the road. I think we're getting into the end of the road in two different ways. For one, their outrages are reaching an absurd level. Things like this. Monsters. This is how the West views white males at the moment. Are parents of young boys prepping them for a society that's positioned against them? Are they aware? White parents, what are you prepping your son for this future for him? And it's from an Australian newspaper. How do we stop this kid from becoming a monster? Call for domestic violence lessons at all schools to address the menace of toxic masculinity. And it's literally just a white boy. Just a white boy, you know? How do we stop this kid from becoming a monster? I don't know. How about you don't abuse him endlessly? Here's an idea. How about you don't condemn him before he's old enough to tie his shoes? How about you don't fill his head with the most vile self-hatred the world has ever seen? I mean, what a despicable thing to say. How do we stop this kid from becoming a monster? Again, would anybody, any other group of people stand for this? Are they going to put a picture of a little Islamic kid? How do we stop this kid from becoming a monster? You put a little Jewish kid? How do we stop this kid from becoming a monster? The hell are you talking about? So, I mean, it's their desperation is leading to a situation that's utterly intolerable. And the people aren't going to stand for it. It's completely unfair. It's completely one-sided. And it's completely inverted. White people are the least likely to commit these brutal, horrific attacks. But we are the most likely to be punished for them, regardless of who actually carries them out. And then again, just like you have in Australia, where, I mean, literally, they're like, we're getting rid of all guns. We're doing another big gun buyback program. We're massively restricting gun control, except the Jewish groups will be allowed to arm themselves to an even greater degree. Okay, doesn't seem fair exactly. Same thing's happening in the UK, where a million white girls have been raped by Muslim rape gangs, and any attempt to prevent that, speak out against that, to get justice for that, is met with brutal repression from the UK authorities. The government themselves will step on your throat to silence you if you speak out against it. Meanwhile, schoolgirls are getting armed police escort to Hanukkah parties in the UK. Great. And again, it's not even that that's a bad thing. It's just like, but what about all of the white people? Don't we? So like every single time, white people will be the victim of an attack and then white people will be punished for it. People that carried out the attack will actually benefit from it. And any concerns that white people have about their own safety, about their own country being taken over, will be treated as vile racism and you'll be sent to jail for expressing it. Meanwhile, Jewish groups get attacked, immediately get hundreds of thousands of dollars for their own security, immediately get armed guards paid for by the state to escort them where they're going. That's crazy. I mean, just one would be fine or the other would be fine, but to have both of these things happen simultaneously is kind of impossible to ignore. And it's the same thing that is happening in Australia. In fact, part of the article that I didn't get to in the last segment about Chris Minns opening up, you know, even greater gun ownership specifically and exclusively to Jewish groups. The Victorian government has already pledged nearly $1 million to this Jewish group's Victorian chapter in the wake of the Bondi attack. So they got $900,000 grant following the Bondi attack. Now they're going to be allowed to carry guns when the rest of Australia will be prevented from doing so. That seems a little unfair. Again, if it was the other way around, if it was, you know, like, okay, Christians get attacked and Christians get $1 million to boost their security, and then it happens to Jews and same thing, you know, Jews get the same thing, I got no problem with it. But instead, you get, you know, crushing new, they're like creating new court procedures in UK to more efficiently imprison people for their speech while they're providing police escort to Jews. It's like, well, both of these groups have been victims of crime. Why is one group punished and the other group rewarded? Why is one group's safety seen as paramount and they're getting grants and they're getting special carve outs and they're getting like special attention from the government? The other side gets literally punished for advocating for themselves. Am I the bad guy for pointing this out? It's infuriating. It really is. So, I mean, yeah, literally a million white girls attacked, totally covered up, totally silenced, totally prevented from speaking out. Now, decades later, they're half-heartedly doing a review of this. Meanwhile, Jewish people get attacked on the other side of the world, and you have armed police escorts for Jewish people in the UK for some reason. Okay. Meanwhile, police make 30 arrests a day for offensive online messages in the UK. Police are making more than 30 arrests a day over offensive posts on social media and other platforms. Thousands of people are being detained or questioned for sending messages that cause, quote, annoyance, inconvenience, or anxiety to others via the internet, telephone, or mail. Custody data obtained by the Times shows that officers are making about 12,000 arrests a year under Section 127 of the Communications Act 2003 and Section 1 of the Malicious Communications Act 1988. The number of arrests made under Section 127 of the Communications Act and the Malicious Communications Act puts them on basically the highest level of for any country for arrest for thought crime. Officers from 37 police forces made 12,183 arrests in 2023, the equivalent of about 33 per day. That marks about a 58% rise in arrests since before the pandemic. In 2019, forces logged just 7,734 detentions. That's all. Oh, only 8,000. Minuscule number. And like the crazy thing is, people will compare the number of people arrested in the UK to like the number of people arrested in Russia and point out that the UK has a massive, like a much, much more massive program to arrest people for their speech than Russia, the dictatorship, does. But that's not even taking into account the populations. It's even worse when you do it per capita. So like UK outdoes Russia in pure numbers. But then when you divide it by the population of the UK versus the population of Russia, they're like 100 times worse than Russia. And they're trying to start World War III to kill you. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. So it's becoming intolerable and people are not tolerating it anymore and are actually standing up against what has been just normalized in the Western world of white people not being defended and non-white people having every benefit, every leeway, every excuse made for them. Andre Matthews has been charged with murder in Texas after he reportedly stabbed 16-year-old Andrew Meismer to death at school. Multiple students have reported that Matthews had a long disciplinary history at school, which included prior violent altercations. If you haven't seen the story on CNN or MSNBC because it doesn't fit the narrative. So we can just add this to the list of people this year, young white students murdered by black people for no reason. And after, you know, multiple chances of intervention to prevent this exact occurrence from happening. Now, the kids at this school are actually protesting against the school district, demanding justice and demanding they be protected in their own schools. And really the most outrageous thing about this is that the school officials are, again, just like Australia, so paralyzed by political correctness that they cannot adequately respond to threats against their students or demands from their own students. So they just ignore them. And it's like, how did we get to this point? You can have a kid murdered in school and the school just acts like nothing happened, because to address what happened would be to admit their own failures and admit their own inadequacy and admit that the desperation to stop the school to prison pipeline means you're leaving violent, dangerous kids in the school with innocent kids who they'll kill. Let's go to clip number one here. These are the students at Ross S. Sterling High School protesting against their school district after the school district allowed one of their fellow students to be murdered and is doing absolutely nothing to address it. Let's watch.
It's been a heartbreaking day watching students from Sterling High School stand out here for hours protesting against their school district and the school district leaders. They say in their minds, Andrew Meismer did not have to die, but now that he is dead, he deserves justice.
Justice for Andrew!
A constant stream of students stood in front of Sterling High School all day, demanding justice for their friend and classmate, Andrew Meismer.
He was a great guy. He didn't deserve this. And the school district is out here. They're not separating these kids that clearly aren't, like, fit to be in a normal classroom environment and are a danger to other students.
Multiple students say Meismer was stabbed on Wednesday in science class after he got in a fight with the other student. But they also say the stabbing suspect has a long disciplinary history at school.
A few teachers were complaining about the student before hand about all the assault charges and knives that he brought on campus, but nothing was ever done about it.
The students told us that despite repeated offenses, the 18-year-old suspected of stabbing Meismer was always allowed to return to school.
My main problem with them is that, you know, it's just business as usual. Even though a child is dead, somebody's child died on their property, and it's like, come take your finals and go to school.
Justice for Andrew!
Students say Andrew Meismer and his family deserve so much more transparency.
I think that it was crazy. I don't think that should ever happen to anybody, no matter what they have done.
The students say they will be back here tomorrow morning once again to protest until their voices are heard. We should note we have repeatedly asked the school district to speak publicly about this because clearly the kids want to hear something. And so far, we have been met with silence.
Like, how do they get away with that? They're not saying anything. They're not addressing the kids' concerns. Fight over $21 vape pen led to Sterling High stabbing, officials say. Matthews had a lengthy disciplinary record at school, including prior incidents with violence, yet was always allowed to return. I mean, the girl in that was like, you know, all of the assaults and bringing knives to school. Like, clearly this was a regular thing for this kid. Why do you think he wasn't punished? Why do you think he was treated differently? You know, it's the same thing that led to the massacre at the Parkland High School in Florida. It's because there's an attempt to stop the, quote, school-to-prison pipeline, with the assumption being that if you punish kids in school like they're adults, if you actually send them to jail for their crimes, then they'll be screwed over for life. So they say instead, we'll just punish them through the school and it will be minor punishments. And it's all designed around this false narrative of the school to prison pipeline, when really it's just some kids are bad, some kids are criminal and are hurting other kids and should be removed so the other kids can feel safe. But because they want the crime stats to go down so they can look like they're improving, even though they're not, the crimes are still happening at an ever elevated rate. But if you don't log them, if you don't count them as crimes, if you just count them as, you know, school disciplinary actions, and it doesn't get logged in the crime book, then you can look like you're fighting crime when really all you're doing is benefiting the criminal. Do you think if a white kid comes to school with a knife, they'll be let off? Do you think they'll be let back to school the next day? A white kid is attacking people continuously, assaulting people regularly. Do you think the school is going to bend over backwards to make allowance for them? And if it did happen, do you think the school board would refuse to say anything, would refuse to acknowledge it, would refuse to discuss anything being done to combat it happening again? Our entire system in the Western world is paralyzed by this ridiculous anti-white political correctness that is becoming more and more apparent as people are talking more and more about white victims and non-white perpetrators. They got to get over this. How about you treat everybody the same and we not give benefits to black people because they have a higher incarceration rate? How about we don't try to stop the school-to-prison pipeline when the school-to-prison pipeline is appropriate because the kids are criminals and committing crimes? And, of course, in Florida, it was even worse because they basically said, we're not charging anybody under 18 with crimes. So then all the gangs went and recruited high schoolers to go commit crimes for them. So it actually increased the crime rate because they knew that the kids were untouchable because they passed this law to deal with a problem that never existed. So now you've got high school students who are having to take on the initiative themselves, say, we don't feel safe at school. You let a violent, insane adult, by the way, 18 years old, to hang around our school to the point that he eventually killed somebody. And like hell, even if, like, in high school, we had a kid die in a car accident, like the school shut down for a little while to let people deal with it. In this case, they get a kid gets stabbed in the neck with scissors at school, dies at school, and they're just like, see you tomorrow for finals. Well, if we were to actually treat this, with any seriousness, we'd have to somehow confront the fact that we let black kids continually break the law and the rules and never get punished for it. And it's letting white kids be the victim. And we don't want to have to confront that. So we'll just not say anything about it and hope it goes away. Just despicable. Shameful. But we've got more. But that's not the only case from the last day. Austin Herber is a man who's now facing hate crime charges because his car was struck by a bunch of illegal aliens in a different car. Let's go to clip number two here. Austin Herber facing hate crime charges literally for being white and having crimes done against him by non-whites. Let's watch.
Lynn police responded to this crash by the intersection of Mack Todd Road and West Gannon Avenue early Sunday morning. You can see the black car is driving on the grass, loses control, and slams into the white truck. Emma Lawson says she was sitting in the passenger seat in that truck. She and her friends were leaving the bar, Smashmasters.
I woke up and there was blood all over my legs and all over my face. And after that, I don't really know what happened other than hearing that the guys were trying to flee.
Police say there were three men in that black car, and the driver left the scene before they arrived. Austin Herber, the driver of the white truck that was hit, is facing several charges, including assault, kidnapping, ethnic intimidation, and the intention to terrorize others with a gun. The owner of Smashmasters, Jessica Thompson, believes these accusations couldn't be further from the truth.
When we pulled up, there was a girl on the ground, and Austin was out of the car, instructing the two individuals that were there from the other vehicle to stay on the ground and not to leave. He did ask where they came from and who they were.
Warren say Herber struck the men who were in the black car multiple times in the head, verbally threatened and assaulted them with a handgun, quote, because of their race, color, nationality, or country of origin. Thompson is asking for clarity from the police department because she and several other witnesses say they disagree.
We never saw a gun. I never saw him hit them with a gun. The only thing I saw him do was come up to them and take them by the shoulder and tell them to get back on the ground because those individuals were trying to leave the scene.
CBS 17 News asked the Zebulon Police Department about the claims of ethnic intimidation, as well as the charge to terrorize others with a gun, but they did not provide any clarity. The police department did tell us the driver of the black car who ran away, Juan Campos, was later found and cited for failing to remain at the scene of an accident and failing to reduce to avoid a crash. We asked if speed or impaired driving was involved. That was also not addressed.
As Daniel Concannon puts it on X, this is peak anti-white system insanity. Austin Herber is facing hate crime charges for literally being white and having crimes committed against him by non-whites. Austin Herber was driving his pickup truck when he was T-boned. Three men in the car in question were presumably Latino, based on reports that the name of the driver who unlawfully fled the scene is Juan Campos. No reports, of course, on anyone's legal status. Herber, who took the full impact of the crash directly to his driver's side door, yet was miraculously mobile in the aftermath, did what he could do to hold the other two men at the scene until police arrived. For his efforts, Herber has been charged with assault, kidnapping, ethnic intimidation, which is the hate crime, you know, enhancement, intention to terrorize others with a gun. Once again, Austin Herber was the victim of an automobile crash in which the offending driver fled the scene. And those are among the nine charges faced by the white victim who was hit by the car full of non-white men who tried to run. Go ahead, read the charges again. I lack the vocabulary to effectively convey this level of lunacy. Eyewitnesses vehemently disagree with claims and charges, say they never saw Herber wield a gun. But even if Austin Herber did have a gun, why on earth should he not pistol whip these people to prevent them from fleeing the scene, as one had already done after they nearly just killed him? Put yourself in this man's shoes. You're in a vehicle at night. You're minding your own business. Another vehicle smashes into you. The driver runs. Two more men get out. You hold them at the scene until police arrived. Then you are arrested and charged with multiple hate crimes, which, of course, means he could be going to jail for like 20 years for being hit by a car and people fleeing, and he tries to hold them. So, again, I mean, we can laugh at the UK. We can laugh at, Australia being insane, but it's obviously coming here. It's obviously here already, and it's only getting worse. So, like, we don't have to stand for this. This isn't okay. It's not how the world should work, and you don't have to accept it. No matter what Ben Shapiro says, you can argue against this. You can actually point out the conspiracies that have been invoked to create this condition, to create this reality. You can fight back against it by conspiring yourself with your fellow white people to actually oppose what's being done and to stand up for it and to make political change to prevent this insane discrimination and hatred that we are faced with constantly. We're going to be joined by Ian Carroll in the next hour. We're going to start off the hour with a new music video from IMA, friend of the show. We're going to have to get her on to talk about this, but she's come out with a new song that's been stuck in my head for weeks, even though I've only ever listened to clips of it. We finally got the full thing, so we're going to play that at the beginning of the next hour while we get Ian Carroll in studio. We're going to cover all sorts of things, including the new app he's come out with. Stay tuned. It's going to be a very, very good final hour. But I do want to remind you, go today to thealexjonesstore.com. Not only are you taking advantage of this massive Christmas sale where you're getting up to 60% off some products, you can also be one of the first to order Ultimate Power, the energy and focus powder from thealexjonesstore.com. This is like Turbo Force reborn energy out the wazoo. So powerful, we have to warn you not to take too much of it. Take just enough and you'll feel the power. thealexjonesstore.com.
So I'm not giving up. I'm not going away. If they shut us down, I got the Alex Jones Network. I don't know, and I'm going over there. You finance it. You paid for it with your support. I'm just telling you, here's the weird paradox. I thought we'd be shut down last year. I thought we'd be shut down 2 months ago. The receiver won't let us order new product over at TimFullerStore.com. So we're in this paradox now where we're winning, and now they're like, well, you'll actually be open in the middle of next year now and all this stuff, and there's no money because people believe it was going to shut down. Plus, there's no product. But I convinced the receiver. I said, can we at least make fundraising posters, which are very low cost, have a high markup, people know it's an investment, to keep us on the air? Can I do that? I said, yeah, you can do that. I can just tell you, we need your support right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Three posters I designed, two I designed, Rob designed the other one. Defend the West, famous Crusader King, Make No Peace with Evil, same Crusader King, and then Do Like That Still Image of Me, and it is the bestseller. It's I've only begun to fight John Paul Jones, and it's InfoWars 1997 to 2026. And yeah, you can buy Unsigned for $25, big posters, glossy in a tube, or you get it for $100. You're like, God, that's huge markup. Yeah, it's a fundraiser. Like when commies give NPR $200 for a ball cap, costs $15. That's the whole point. We're actually winning right now. I don't want to count chickens before their hatch. It's not the Democrats. It's not the DOJ holdovers. They're going to shut us down. If you don't go get these posters and you don't support us, and I'm not bitching at you, I'm just telling you, I'm not saying you got to do it, then you'll be the ones that shut us down. This is a marathon, so please support us, InfoWarsStore.com. I need the money right now. It's like a Star Trek Wrath of Khan. He goes, I need warp speed in 3 minutes, we're all dead.
Scotty, I need warp speed in 3 minutes or we're all dead.
And you guys have got us out of this over and over and over again. And me, I'm not giving up. We need to keep pushing because we've got their ass.
Once you perceive what lies beneath the surface, once you glimpse the truth behind the polite illusion, you are faced with a terrible choice. Do you speak or do you remain silent? If you speak, you disturb the dream. If you stay silent, you disturb your soul.
All right, that's the latest from Aya May, very talented pop artist from Australia. That one is called Good Citizen, and she just released that music video today. Go find it on YouTube. Good Citizen by Aya May. That's I-Y-A-H-M-A-Y. We need artists on the right making compelling content. Support her now, Aya May.
Whoa, dude, is that methylene blue? This house really knows me. Shilajit gummies. I gotta hide these from Melania. She loved them bigly. These sure taste great and they're good for me too. You can buy me now at the alexjonesstore.com.
Well, hello there, Info Warriors. We are having a 60% off sale on selected items. Take a look behind me. We have the sea moss and Shilajit gummies. And you know, we have the medical grade methylene blue that will light your ass up like a Christmas tree. You can also buy one of me in the store. Act now while supplies last.
You're tuned in to the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Third hour of the War Room is on. In studio with me is the one and only Ian Carroll. You can follow him on X at Ian Carroll Show. On YouTube at the same location, at Ian Carroll Show. And you can go to cancelIanCarroll.com. He is a fearless truth seeker and independent researcher with over 1.3 million followers on X. Ian is a sharp-witted host of the Ian Carroll Show on YouTube, where he masterfully follows the money, exposes hidden connections, and encourages everybody to do their own research. And of course, he's, you've started live streaming and you're doing a show at 8 tonight. Welcome to the War Room, sir.
Yeah, good to be back. Good to see you, Harrison.
Good to see you. And you got a lot of stuff going on. You are like the busiest man in media right now. What should we start with? Buyer? Should we start with your show tonight?
Let's start with Buyer because we can talk about Las Vegas all night long and then, you know, five more shows about it.
Yeah.
Which is what I'm going to do tonight. But the Buyer app is a fun, lighthearted break in the middle of all this madness. And it's a fun solution too, right? Because I think a lot of times we get trapped just talking about the problems. And sometimes it's nice to zoom back out and talk about solutions and what people can actually do to make the country and their lives a better place.
And this is sort of a throwback to your early content, right? You got started going to grocery stores or supermarkets and sort of pointing out that all of these various products are all owned by the same multinationals. And that's sort of incorporated into Buyer, right? So it's an app, B-U-Y-R.
Yeah.
Right. So Buyer without the E.
Exactly. And it's in some ways it's a throwback, but in a lot of ways it's just a natural extension directly from the first content that, my platform went viral for, is going around and trying to figure out who owns all the products in our lives, who owns all the industries that we're purchasing from. And I started making spreadsheets and the audience always was asking like, hey, this needs to be an app. And then finally I met the right team and we just developed it ourselves. There's three of us and it's finally available on the App Store and the Google Play Store. And it has been the coolest launch ever. It's so cool to watch people actually get this in their hands and scan products in the grocery store and figure out what in their lives is family and founder owned, what's corporate owned, what's private equity, and start to be able to make some shifts and some purchasing decisions that actually like votes with your dollar about how you want your country to be led, how you want your economic reality to be, and what you want to be in your products too, because I started out doing all this content about products at sort of these base level BlackRock conspiracies, which is great for views, but it's not really the heart of the real dynamic truth behind it all. The dynamic part of it is that shares confer voting rights. And so all this ownership that companies like BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street hold all across the market and all these mega corporations, that ownership represents voting rights in the corporate world. It represents who's going to be the CEO of Archer Daniel Midland, who's going to be the CFO of, I don't know, Unilever.
Yeah, Tyson,
right?
Exactly. Any of these other major corporations.
And so then it also incentivizes all of these executives at all of these corporations. It incentivizes their behavior and it incentivizes what sort of lines they're going to toe and what the general makeup of the corporate world is going to be. And the corporate world is our reality. It's all the stores we shop at. It's all the product we buy and consume and use. And so when all of the money is flowing up into their hands and they have all the voting rights in that corporate reality, they control so much of the American life, sort of behind the shadows that we never really look at. And most of the money that's being, you know, given to them is being given by us without our knowledge, because right. we just don't have information to understand that actually your local vet was bought out by private equity 2 years ago. And actually that product, it like Burt's Bees looks all natural. Nope. It was bought out by Clorox.
Yeah.
So they have these strategies to make you think you have all these choices, and it's just the illusion of choice, which we kind of know we have, but actually having a tool that's easy, that's in your pocket, that's free, that you can just scan it and then pierce that veil is one of the most it's one of the simplest ways to fight back against all this.
Yeah. And it's actually effective. And again, it goes beyond sort of the power structure to like, what are you putting in your body or on your body, right? Or, you know, on your children, or what are they wearing? You know, these big corporations have the ability to hide the actual ingredients, or, you know, get stuff approved that shouldn't be approved otherwise. You can actually, so does Bayer include that type of material? What do you see when you, so walk it through. You go to the app store, you search B-U-Y-R, you download the app, and then what do you do with it once you have it?
You make a simple profile. It doesn't ask you for too much information because we don't collect your data. We're never going to sell data. We have no interest in that. We also don't sell ads, which is a critical piece of this whole thing, because you can't have a app that's giving you information about who owns everything if you can purchase the information. That's never going to work. So that is never going to happen, and it's just purely information. And you can just scan a barcode on any product, or you can search for products, you can search for brands, and it'll tell you who owns that product, that brand, but it also tell you who owns that company. So you can trace the ownership structure all the way to the top, and you can learn what's their corporate history, who works at that company, what kind of like investments do they have. And it does give you things like ingredients. It gives you ability to filter ingredients that you do or don't want to see. It gives you a lot of the kind of basic information that a lot of other apps give you, but it also adds that ownership layer, which is how you vote with your dollar. And you bring up a really good point that there's this element of we're being poisoned by yeah. all these different products. And sometimes that's as simple as reading an ingredient label. But actually, with the very first product section that kind of kicked this research off for me, which was tampons, tampons are a great example of a product category where actually you're not required to list ingredients on the packaging. Mm. And, you know, we can all, you know, put our tinfoil on about why that might be. But the fact that you don't have to list the ingredients on a package of tampons, it is just a blank check to put whatever you want in them. And you can just Google, you know, what's in my tampons.
Yeah.
And you can find all kinds of horror stories about what kind of chemicals and bleaches and dyes. And when I did that first report on tampons, my comments were flooded with women that just had their own personal stories about how when they changed to a more natural product, it just completely alleviated what they thought was just their natural like symptoms of menstruating. But it actually was a reaction to whatever was poison. In those yeah. poisonous products. And wow. so tampons are the perfect example of a product where reading the ingredients isn't going to help. And so the next right. best thing is buying a female founder owned product, because a giant corporation, like I kid you not, Energizer, the battery company,
uh-huh.
they at one point, they've since sold it, but they had bought one of the premier tampon brands when I was first doing this research. And so I'm in the aisle and I'm like doing the research. I'm like looking it up on my phone and I'm like, what? This tampon is owned by Energizer? Like obviously they don't care what they're putting into your body.
Right.
And the contrast is that if you buy from a female founder owned brand, that's a woman that owns that company that made that brand and cares for that brand and is proud of that brand because they wanted to help women. And so it's just the most obvious example of how buying from founder owned, female owned, family owned companies, just it bypasses the need, often not always, to worry about what's the ingredients, because you're choosing to source your product from someone else that cares what's
right.
in the product, as opposed to like, yeah, there are high quality products from corporations when they want to fill the niche of natural or organic, but you can't trust the corporate structure to have your best interest at heart.
Right.
It's like maybe they'll profit off of your best interest, but it's not because they care about you.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you're just better off, you know, your odds are better at getting a good product with a founder owned, you know, business anyway, which is the death cycle of American corporations. Really, it's just a life cycle, I should say, where, you know, a founder has an idea, takes a risk, you know, puts his sweat, blood, equity into it, builds it up, and then it's just bought out by somebody using our money through retirement funds and private equity. And then it gets completely bastardized and incorporated into this larger corporate monstrosity. But it happens quietly. People don't know. They've grown to trust and believe in a product. They don't even realize that it's now being controlled by BlackRock, which goes back to what we were talking about yesterday with this bombshell story from Compact Magazine that's been, you know, the top of the charts all week, pointing out that, okay, this anti-white sort of anti-male agenda came about around 2014. And I was pointing out, well, 2014 was when the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and the Larry Finks and BlackRock all decided we're doing DEI, we're doing ESG, this is how we're going to grade companies now. And so, you know, they act like, well, it's just this phenomenon, men were being, you know, kicked out of the boardroom. It's like, no, this was a policy from on high that was dictated by BlackRock, basically, and companies were forced to capitulate to it because that's where they get their funds from. So, like, you know, I think people need to recognize, as you're talking about, the power these companies have. It's tangible and it's already affected you whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, the way that I look at it is there's sort of three baskets of influence that we're going after here. And one is actually like what's in the products, like we were talking about, is right. You have an opportunity to have a better sourcing of getting not poisoned. Then there's this sort of corporate voting structure that actually is the control mechanism of how is our corporate world run, which really dictates how America is run. And you can just look up videos of Larry Fink directly talking about in both in person, on in speeches, in live talks, as well as in his annual letter to investors. He often would talk about how we're going to push everyone in this direction because we think it's the right thing. And if you don't go in this direction, there's going to be consequences. You have to force behavior is the famous quote that he did say.
He did.
And then the third is actually the flows of money because, you know, power and influence happens through these other complex structures of voting and of leverage over people and job security, all these other things. But the money itself is actually its own unique structure too, where when you buy founder and family owned products, your money is flowing back into your community. It's flowing back down to workers that work in your town, that live in your town. You're more likely to be buying a product that is sourced from raw ingredients that are also local, also in your community. And so, you know, no system is perfect and no family or founder owned company is perfect, but you're just a much higher likelihood when you buy family and founder owned that you're keeping the money you're spending invested in your local communities and circulating between real people. Whereas when you buy from a corporation, the vast majority of that money is actually flowing up into corporate coffers that are then getting paid out in dividends and share buybacks and all these other kind of equity structures up to the investors and the shareholders. And it's getting squirreled away in the bank accounts of the financial institutions. And it will never come back down to your local community. It is basically just the trickle up economics of the money gets printed, the money goes to you, the money gets spent on all these corporate products that you think you have choice over, and it trickles all up into their bank accounts.
To the same people.
Never comes back.
Well, I love it. I mean, again, you know, we talk a lot about problems and we do want to offer solutions. And it seems like the Buyer app is a pretty brilliant, like, one size fits all. And I know my wife's going to be into it because it's a burden to have to research all this stuff, especially like for new moms that have kids that suddenly become hyper aware of what they're putting in their bodies. Or if you're pregnant, I mean, women become hyper aware of that.
Look up who owns your baby food and look up what toxic heavy metals and what poisons are in baby food. That is a crazy rabbit hole to go down.
That,
which kind of is a big piece of what got me going deep into this stuff.
That might be one of the craziest. Like it is insane going to the store and looking at every single baby product, and it's like the number one ingredient of all of them is corn syrup. It's like how did this ever get approved? And then you can't even pronounce the rest of the ingredients.
Exactly.
At least I can pronounce corn syrup. I can't pronounce dimethyl hextracide or whatever else.
But the other thing that we wanted to do is because we knew that like a lot of moms, a lot of people that work regular jobs would be using this app, and we didn't want to make just an app that is going to help you understand who owns everything. That's the primary purpose, but we want to make your life easier at the same time. So we included things like shopping lists and pantry features. Since you're going to be scanning products already anyways, why not build a way for you to now, like, you needed another thing that's not in the fridge but you forgot and your wife's at the stores, you can add it to the shopping list that's shared and it pops up right there. She can scan products. It's all interoperable through these scanning mechanisms, and we're actually we're planning to bring receipt scanning to the app before too long here.
Cool.
Too, so you can actually just scan a whole receipt, throw it into your pantry, and then it's in your pantry at home. We're also looking at adding recipe generation out of that, so I know what I have in my pantry and I want to know what to cook for dinner tonight. Here's five suggestions of things that you already have in your pantry to cook for dinner tonight.
So the app's not done. You're still building it out. You're still adding things to it.
Yeah. So there's three of us and we have one resident nerd that is like the most gangster programmer on the world. And he's just constantly scheming up new ways to improve, new projects to build, new ways to add more value. And so the app itself is free and you can get all the basic features for free. And then there is a $5 add-on within the app if you want it that will give you sort of extra access to a lot of the features, and that way we can help pay the bills and offset all all the costs in the back end so that the main app can stay free for everybody and everyone can use these ownership features and kind of pull back that veil without having to, like, everyone foot the bill somehow. So,
well, that's brilliant. And, you know, we're going to move on and get into all the political stuff, but I guess just as a final note, has anything really surprised you? Like, has there been any product that you thought for sure was all natural, you thought for sure was good, and then you just find out it's owned by just the terror? What's like the worst example you can think of?
Well, actually, this is an opposite example. These kinds of questions are scary for me because I always forget specific examples. My brain doesn't hold specific examples in mind. But what pops to mind actually is, it was on launch day and I was just going around scanning everything in the grocery store, and I've got a pretty good understanding of who owns most things now. Like, I know that Clorox makes your ranch dressing, they make your Burt's Bees. I know who
you know where to look for the little Frito-Lay icon.
I've been doing this research for like years now, but I was in the pancake aisle and I was just trying to, because I was trying to scan all the corporate products to kind of get those brands research, get the data in, make sure it was all good. And I scanned Krusty's pancake mix, you know, the most basic pancake mix on the world. That's family owned, dude. Krusty's is a third generation family owned company.
Nice. There you go.
And so there's like these little gem surprises that you, like the sauce aisle is full of family owned, founder owned sauces. There's certain areas where you find just really fun, like things that you wouldn't have expected, where a brand that you would have been sure was like corporate for decades is actually founder or family owned for generations is a real way to brighten your day, actually, because
that's great.
It reminds you that America is not necessarily completely doomed. There are still good people out there, and there are people that don't want to sell out.
I wonder, are you thinking about adding any social aspect to it? Because it'd kind of be fun to share that type of stuff.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of social aspect. There's a little bit of an ability to sort of share what you find and earn some badges and ranks and stuff like that. There's also one feature that's really cool. That is one of my favorite things that no one is talking about yet, but I think they will once it builds out, is that the ability to rate and review products.
Mm.
That's what makes online shopping so easy, is when you're buying a product you've never had before, you can just read the reviews on Amazon.
Right.
But there's no analog for that in the grocery store. And
right.
Now there is. And so now when you're, you know, looking up that new Stouffer's dinner or this like pancake mix you've never had or whatever it is, you can just see what have other buyers rated it at and have they written reviews about it. And we have some metrics where you have to have done a certain number of scans and kind of been in the app long enough before you unlock ratings and reviews, so we don't get spammed by a bunch of, you know, so that Krusty's or whoever can't, you know, spam their own reviews.
Yeah, yeah.
But as people are unlocking that feature and more products are getting rated and reviewed, that is going to become a really rich feature to sort of simplify the decision-making process and crowdsource quality.
So what's the overall, like, is this just an attempt to give power back into the hands of consumers, or is this sort of in line with like the parallel economy idea where a lot of people have been promoting for a long time, where it's like, look, the mainstream of everything is controlled. We have to be creating our own thing. We have to be shopping in our own stores. We have to be running our own social medias. And it seems like this is a very good step in that direction, where you can get people actually removing their complicity in the operations of these corporations by giving them money. You can take yourself out of that and be only supporting, you know, your own local network.
The thing I like the most about Buyer and about the two guys that I met that are my team on this, and we own it 33, 33, 33, 33, so it's equal decision making power, and we all are aligned on this most important fact that it's not about our ideology and it's not about our goals. We're not here to tell you what's healthy. We're not here to tell you what products are good or bad. My personal ideology is that family and founder owned is good, but it's not like the app is promoting founder and family owned brands over other brands. It's just giving you information.
Nice.
Because the whole point is that we're not going to tell you, we're not the arbiters of truth, we're not the arbiters of what's better for you or not. We're just trying to arm you with information. And then with information, we believe that people can make informed decisions that match their lives and their values and their needs far better than anyone on high, any central authority. And so it works for all sorts of different things. It can help you boycott. It can help you save money. It can help you get more healthy. It can help you support your local community, parallel economy, whatever you want to do. But it's not up to me to tell you what to do with it. It's just up to me to give you the information and to try my very best to ensure that it's accurate. And then I just can't wait to see what people do with it.
That's extremely exciting. So you can go to buyerapp.com, right? BUYRAPP.com and get that. And you can find it on Apple and Android.
Sir.
And I know you've been working on this for a long time. I've been trying to hang out with you for the last couple of months. You're like, oh, it's this buyer app thing, man. We got to get it done. So congratulations on bringing it out. And that's extremely exciting. I have a feeling it's going to be extremely helpful for a lot of people. That's really awesome. Now, you're doing a live stream tonight at 8 covering the Las Vegas massacre. of, you know, the shooting at the Route 66. Route 61. Yeah. That's right. I think still the most deadly mass shooting in American history.
Yes.
I talked about this recently because I saw a YouTuber and it was just a reminder of like the ability of the American media landscape to cover up things that you would think were impossible to cover up. I mean, there were thousands of people that witnessed the shooting in Las Vegas whose personal testimony is completely contradicted by the official story.
Yep.
And yet it seems like the cover-up has succeeded. Nobody talks about it anymore.
It's partially succeeded in the sense that, yeah, it has largely been memory-holed. I think that a lot of people, when you start a conversation as we're about to talk about the deadliest mass shooting in American history, most Americans wouldn't know that it was Las Vegas. Most right. Americans wouldn't even think of that because it's not in their minds, because there has been a media blackout ever since like 4 or 5 days after the shooting. There's been a media blackout on the whole thing in mainstream media. For a long time, social media was taking posts down, YouTube was censoring videos. So they have been largely successful at covering it up, but they haven't been successful in covering up the wealth of evidence that we have, just the massive amount of data points that point to not only a cover-up, not only an alternate narrative to what they said, but also to a somewhat of an ability for alternative journalists to actually work on solving the crime, or at least providing theories that are far more possible than the mainstream one. And so it sort of is this this open book still that is occasionally people will stop in and work on it and kind of check in and talk about it. But I think that a lot of people in the wake of Charlie Kirk have this newfound appreciation for the nature of a cover-up and the nature of shootings. We just had two really tragic mass shootings in this world. I mean, we have lots every week, unfortunately, but two really high-profile ones in the last week. And so it occurred to me that maybe we should revisit this one glaring example at Las Vegas and examine what are the similarities between these things and what are the things you should look for to indicate that you're looking at a cover up.
Right.
Because, you know, not all shootings are some tinfoil, you know, false flag conspiracy. Las Vegas was.
Right.
And very obviously was. And right now there's this, you know, this constantly evolving discussion about the Charlie Kirk assassination where people are going back and forth about was that, some sort of conspiracy, something bigger, or was it just Tyler Robinson, the lone gunman? And I think that a lot of people are getting lost in the emotions of the moment. And when any time that there's breaking news that has people emotional, which is a tactic that they use to get you to not think, I always like to look backwards in history at something that's not so present, not so raw for us, so that we can kind of get some perspective on present day by remembering the past and learning from history.
So do you have a working theory of what you think actually happened in Las Vegas?
I would argue that I subscribe to the theories of journalists far more ingrained in the story than myself, because ultimately I wasn't there and I wasn't doing reporting at the time. I picked up the story years and years later once I built my platform and started researching like the deep state and kind of conspiracy theories and all that. And so I came to the scene of this story very, very late. And by then a lot of really high quality journalists, had already done a whole lot of work. People like John Cullen, Jason Goodman, Mindy Robinson, and many, many, many more. Yourselves included, InfoWars did a lot of great reporting on it over the years. And so what I've done is I've kind of watched and synthesized what they all say. And I tend to subscribe to some version of the probably some sort of, assassination or hit gone wrong. Probably Saudi involvement based upon, the global geopolitical context at the time.
Right.
But we don't have strong evidence of that. We don't have strong proof. There's actually, it's a really interesting story. The video that sort of got slid into the narrative to try to discredit that story is a really interesting one. But, I think that is the most likely, but one thing that is, you know, despite the tragedy, one thing that's really fun for me is that there's so many loose threads still to pull on that are so spooky and spicy that there's a lot of room for speculation and free thought.
Well, you it kind of requires speculation because we're obviously not getting the official story that makes any sense at all. I mean, we're about to go to break, but we'll go over the Las Vegas shooting. Again, not in particular to talk about the Las Vegas shooting, but to use it as an example of the way that the American media and government can cover up pretty much anything. I mean, if you can cover up the Mandalay Bay shooting, you can cover up anything. Thousands of witnesses, they're all silenced. How does that happen?
I need you to support the broadcast financially, and I just need those of you on the fence that have never gone to theauctionstore.com to go get the ultramethylene blue. I'm only going to sell something that's really good for you and works great.
Because, again, a good salesman sells a product that works, and it's good, and that I use. So take the challenge. Go to theauctionstore.com now and get Ultramethylene Blue. And it's the greatest because it's so good it hits in like 30 minutes. But the real effects happen the days and weeks as it builds up in you. The Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, the bovine colostrum, that's going to take a few weeks to kick in. You get your wife pregnant, she'd have a baby for 9 months, folks. You only got to wait a few weeks with this. The effects of these are incredible. Again, I can do hours on each product, and these are the best. You study Irish sea moss, you study Shilajit, you study bovine colostrum. It's all the rage forever. These are sure things. I don't go get stuff that isn't already a sure thing. It's so easy. 90% of my waking hours is doing nothing but studying and broadcasting and fighting. And I just want you to keep me commissioned in this fight. Where have you seen results like this? And it's not me. I'm not the opposite of prideful. I'm God-fearing. I fear nothing but God. I'm actually fearful of the position I've been put in by God that I'm like, you need to do a better job. It's the opposite. I'm mad at myself. The crew can tell you behind the scenes. I am pissed off at myself. I am angry that I've been given so much power and I'm not executing it correctly. But God loves sudden death over time. God loves keeping you humble. When you buy from us, you're going to get a great product and you're betting on an organization that has the track record of victory. That's why the bad guys hate us. We know what we're doing. We know how to stop them. They want us off air. If I'm going to sell you something because I'm self-funded, it's going to work. You are missing out so bad if you don't get our Ultra DNA Revival new product, our incredible highest quality, the very best type of creatine gummies and powder, our bovine colostrum, all of it. 60% off right now. It ends next week. Get your orders in by tomorrow. You'll get it anywhere in the country before Christmas. But we need the support. And like I said, I'm out of money. I'm out of stuff to sell. I'm out of whatever. We have about a $400,000 underage going into next month. I mean, literally, to pay the rent and the payroll. I've got my Rolodex out. And I mean, there'll be no strings attached. But I'm starting to call people and folks saying, all right, you know, give me money. Because I ain't giving up. As much as I don't like begging for money, I give it up to the New World Order and rolling over and dying. I hate that even more. But I am literally down to the point now. My parents have lost everything they got. I don't have anything. I don't care. I'm happier than ever. I never had a bunch of stuff. But it doesn't matter when you're up against the wall and you ain't got no more to give. You understand? I'm giving you everything I got. And quite frankly, I'm more alive. I'm stronger. I'm smarter than I've ever been. In fact, I'm high as a kite in this fight. I love this. But the fact is only a fraction of our people are engaged. Oh, the Muslims are engaged. The Jews are engaged. I'm not attacking either group, but you know why they're so powerful? They're engaged. They're involved in their group. Well, who are we? Well, we're Americans of every race, color, and creed that just want freedom and our country and our republic. Well, then you better start acting like it.
Wake up, folks! Spread this message! The globalist machine is tightening the chains, and they're after your freedoms.
The Podesta plan is in operation!
Don't worry, it's safe and effective. Don't you just love my GMO potatoes?
Ladies and gentlemen, the truth is unfolding before our very eyes. We must question everything.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Winter taking days.
Nights filled with longer hours.
Hey!
Yes, sweatshirt, very iconic. Oh, we got Bill in the pool with some ladies. That's the classic one. Oh, there he is with Michael Jackson and Bill Clinton.
I think 2026 is going to be a crazy year.
Man. All right, so the crew's working hard behind the scenes. I doubt you've had a chance to look into everything's fine. Trust your government. Yeah, exactly. You probably haven't had time to look into this. It dropped the minute we went on air.
Yeah, not the new one, no.
Hundreds of thousands of photos and PDFs and documents about Epstein, which aligns with what we're talking about here, the Las Vegas shooting and the ability to cover up pretty much anything when you control all the levers of power and the manipulation of information. So on that, like just off my memory, the bullets being where they shouldn't be, the singer of on stage had a bullet embedded in his bass when the Mandalay Bay was behind him. Not sure how that works. I mean, so the window wasn't broken until like a long time after the shooting took place.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it we know certain things weren't true, but we don't necessarily know the shape of the real truth. The window's a good example.
Right.
Where we were told, obviously, that the window of his two suites were broken and, you know, big broken, like up to a third or two thirds of the window was broken out. That's how they reported on it. And so he's shooting out of that window. But then we later on, great reporters and the media in general just kind of pushes really hard and gets body cam footage released. And, you know, most of the body cams were turned off for reasons, but there's one body cam, from one guy that was in the breaching party. And we have the whole body cam footage of him entering the room, searching the room. They're searching all the other rooms. And in that body cam footage, there's a moment where they get called by other officers saying, "Hey, we're looking for the window from the outside. Can you guys go and make sure you find the window?" And they're looking around and they cannot find the broken window. They're literally in the suite. We have visual in that body cam of them going to the exact location where this crime scene photos show the broken window. The next day, the crime scene photos are during the day, and you can see broken glass everywhere in the crime scene photos. You see the hammer in the crime scene photos, and it's right by this little table. You can clearly see the wind blowing the curtains. And in that body cam footage, you see the officers go to that exact curtain, pull it back, and say, "No, it's not broken. No, 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 not broken." And so it's like that kind of thing is just this clear sign that little piece is wrong. So when did the window get broken? Because the next morning the window was broken. Right.
So somebody broke it.
Exactly. So that's where you have this, you have confirmation that we were lied to, but you don't have confirmation of exactly what did happen.
I'm telling you, we had just started doing live 3 to 5. It was sort of our first, we had the nightly news at first, but it was our first live broadcast, outside of the Alex Jones show. Owen Shore was the host. I think maybe Leanne McAdoo would host sometimes, but we were going live 3 to 5 sort of to train the crews on doing live shows before the War Room and the David Knight Show launched. And so it was just a crazy time because this massacre happened and the information was flooding in, and there was eyewitnesses from all over Vegas talking about running gun battles on the streets and helicopter shooting. And then there's the video we just showed of the supposedly Saudi Arabian prince being escorted out in the middle of it. And it was just this deluge of like, what the hell is going on here? Laura Loomer was on the scene breaking the story. Jose Campos was the security guard that went on Ellen once and then disappeared. We never saw him again. Yeah. There were so many like unanswered questions. And then I recently revisited it a few months ago, and a bunch of more stuff has come out, including emails that show that Paddock, the guy they blamed the whole thing on, looks like he was a gun runner for the CIA. It looks like he was a arms salesman for the CIA. And he was either set up to do a gun trade or some sort, and it sounds like the Saudi Arabian. It was at that same time there was a coup going on in Saudi Arabia, and there was that crazy story in Saudi Arabia where they held a fake technological conference in the Hilton.
Yep.
And it was just a trap. They just brought all the like high-level Saudi Arabians there and then imprisoned them, locked the doors, and shut them in. I mean, it was a crazy time. So it's fascinating to go back and revisit it. Why go back to this now? What's the appeal of reinvestigating the Vegas shooting now?
Well, the first thing is that a crime of this magnitude, a tragedy this grand, it deserves to be solved. Those victims, there's still hundreds of victims out there that are paralyzed, that have traumatic injuries, traumatic trauma. There's every reason to solve it just for the justice for the victims, those that are and are not still with us. It's the most deadly mass shooting in American history, and the current explanation is a farce, and it's a lie, and it's an affront to the justice system and to the justice that those victims deserve. But beyond that, also, it's an incredibly important piece of educational content for Americans to understand in this day and age, because we live in the day and age where we cannot trust our government and where we are lied to by our own government repeatedly about all of the biggest stories and cover-ups. Jeffrey Epstein being one of the most obvious examples that we opened the sequence here with. And when you go back to one like the Mandalay Bay shooting, or you kind of go back through the Jeffrey Epstein case, or you go back to Iran-Contra. Some of these ones where there's clear understanding and evidence that you can trace through and learn how to identify when you're being lied to by the government and identify what are the signs of a cover-up, what are the signs of dishonesty, what are the signs of the changing stories and narratives, and how do you sort of piece out that information space that always surrounds those sorts of stories. It's really important that regular Americans understand these things and learn from each, you know, historical incidents of it, because each one builds on the last. As technology evolves and as the government and sort of the deep state groups and bad actors learn from history, we need to be learning from history too, because Las Vegas is a good example of one where the internet was well in effect. You know, there was cell phone video of all sorts of parts of it, but AI wasn't really there yet. You know, there's all these other new technologies that have changed the game since then. And so each new incidence of this, we have to look at it in a new way, and we have to be learning as we go, just like the criminals have to be learning as they go. A lot of the criminals in the Epstein case never expected for us to be reading through their emails, you know, 30 years later, because they didn't realize the digital nature of that footprint that they were building, because it was such a new technology then. But nowadays, you know, AI is a whole new technology that we need to be contending with in these kinds of cover-ups. And so if we're not learning and retracing our steps and kind of examining the past and keeping the American public up to date on the nature of the cover-up, we risk falling victim to the next one.
And it's a lot of times it's the same people doing it. You can go back to OKC, the OKC bombing, and it's all Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and, the cover-up of that. You know, one thing that came to mind as you mentioned sort of the similarities was, I think it was Stephen Paddock's brother who, remember, went viral for – you know, the Sushi Compt, right? It was like a very, he was a bizarre character in and of himself. I think he was then arrested for child porn images, right? Exactly like the guy in Charlie Kirk who stood up and said, shoot me, this weird George Zinn character. He also gets arrested for pedophilia because he's got the pictures on his phone when he goes to the hospital. So it's another, maybe we're just surrounded by pedophiles. You know, maybe that's the case, but it would be a very convenient way of shutting up somebody who is a witness to something you don't want them to see.
Yeah. There's little signatures, little digital
similarities,
that kind of seem to always crop up in these investigations. And for me, it's always things like changing of the timelines, you know, bullets that don't match the ballistics, evidence that when you really look at it is either been shifted or changed or just doesn't hold up to scrutiny, but gets glossed over by the authorities. Things like kiddie porn on people's, you know, hard drives that need to disappear, or missing hard drives. Stephen Paddock's hard drive was just magically missing from his laptop in his room. So they came up with some bullshit story that, like, his friends all said that Paddock just liked to remove his hard drives from his things all the time. And that was just, he was just weird like that. It's like, okay, that makes so much sense.
Uh-huh.
And so there's this element where, sometimes things are illogical. Sometimes things are not the most probable way. You know, sometimes there's anomalies. Sometimes things are weird. But when you look at these kinds of crimes, when you look at these sorts of stories that have all this evidence, that have all this planning, that are complicated, they have to make some amount of sense. There has to be a narrative by which you can put yourself in the shoes of the perpetrator or perpetrators and understand why you would have made each choice and how each piece of evidence would have gotten there and how that would align with the whole picture. Because the way I always remind myself or look at it is that the actual true story will explain every single piece of evidence perfectly, because that's the nature of reality. Cause and effect. Like, science is science. Physics is physics. And some of those causes might be random chance. Like, maybe it's just a happening that person was there at that time. Maybe it's just random that bullet did that crazy thing. But the true answer will explain every single piece of evidence perfectly, even if there's some chance involved. Whereas the cover-ups usually directly contradict pieces of evidence that just there's no way to square them.
Yeah.
Like the window not being broken, right? Those sorts of things. So,
And you know, with Vegas especially, you know, sometimes we talk about false flags and it seems like it's been planned and carried out in its totality from the get-go. They knew what was going to happen and they knew who they were going to blame. And there are cases like that. When it comes to Las Vegas, it seemed much more messy. And that's also, you know, people think that when you talk about conspiracy theories, you think that everything is scripted down to the letter and everything that happens was supposed to happen because it's all a trick and everything that seemed – and that's not really the case. Sometimes crazy things happen. You know, in the case of Vegas, maybe it was some random assassination attempt they didn't expect and blah. And then they're scrambling, try to cover it up. And then they got to try to find a patsy. Who do they have in the area? And so it seems like with Vegas especially, it was not a well-thought-out, well-coordinated false flag attack. It seemed like a chaotic attack that the authorities had to come in and sort of retrospectively say, no, no, none of that happened. Actually, only this one guy in this one room, he shot. Forget the people in the lobby of the Bellagio saying they were shooting there. Forget the people in the airport saying a helicopter was shooting there. Ignore all of that because it was so not clean. It was so chaotic and messy. But that also happens. People have to understand that the people carrying these out are also humans. They also have to contend with reality. They have to contend with unknowns cropping up. And that actually can be a vulnerability, a chink in the armor where you can actually see the truth through because they don't get everything exactly hermetically sealed and perfect.
I completely agree. That's actually why Las Vegas makes such good evidence and such good training for journalists in this kind of story, in this kind of case, because there's no world in which this was planned to happen this way. You just ran through very elegantly a lot of the elements of why that is. But I always remind myself that even when these people plan things out meticulously, they're still often actually kind of dumb. Sometimes these are just psychopaths. A lot of times in the sort of darker aspects of our world, in the black markets, in the corrupt political spheres, oftentimes they're actually elevating psychopaths. They're elevating corrupt people. They're elevating compromised, blackmailed people. So often that's like, this dude's an alcoholic. That dude's addicted to like kids. That dude's, you know, got this other problem. This dude's just retarded and he's just manipulable. And so there's all of these different people in these kinds of organizations and schemes that often are actually really shitty at their jobs. And so there's often little bits of evidence left all over the place or little weird mistakes that don't make sense. And so even the most planned one in the world, like 9/11, you can still wind up with a moving van full of Israelis that are dancing on top of their roof, like celebrating with their cameras that then get pulled over with explosive residue in their car.
Right.
So there's always little, you know, little things that go wrong, but it's that larger cover up, the apparatus that must exist within our own government to be able to cover up these sorts of things that we watch spring into action with Las Vegas, that I believe we're watching spring into action with Charlie Kirk, that we certainly watch spring into action with 9/11.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people like to jump to conclusions and ascribe like the same type and amount of guilt to everyone in these sorts of situations. But it's so gray and so complicated to understand because Vegas might be the kind of instance where it's like a foreign assassination thing going on and it's like foreign fighters fighting each other and shooting people. And maybe that the American response is just trying to cover up the tragedy and cover up the failure of them to fix this. Maybe they're trying to cover up for a political ally that was involved in that and that was attacked. There's all sorts of reasons why the American government might try to cover that up, even though they weren't the actual perpetrators of it. Right. And one of the key pieces of Las Vegas that I always come back to is that it's so horrific and so messed up. The shooting into a crowd of young, innocent civilians that are just having a good time. That's not a thing that you're like, you cannot convince me that those were Americans flying around in those helicopters, just shooting down into them like animals. You can't convince me that it was American CIA officers that were doing that. It's just not, you need a reason that like that level of violence would be perpetrated. And that's where it gets really interesting when you start to dig into other foreign angles. Some of the Saudi angles really explain that, because when you think about it, it like that really is a lot like terrorism and it looks a lot like terrorism. And you need a perpetrator where you can put yourself in their shoes and say, yes, that perpetrator would commit that type of violence against those people. And that's where 9/11 conspiracies in my mind often fall short, is a lot of 9/11 conspiracies think, oh, the American government did it. It's like you really think that the American government specifically planned to kill all those Americans? It's like, they might have been involved in the cover up in some way. There might have been elements of them, like, you know, cells within the CIA that were involved in some pieces of it without necessarily knowing the whole picture. But that's where you might have a better explanation if you look abroad for the actual perpetrator. And I'm not referring to, you know, Saudi Arabia or Osama bin Laden in that case, you know, certainly involved. But you start to open your mind to the larger geopolitical realities around the world and the actual groups that hate America, the actual groups that are willing to kill Americans, the actual groups that are willing to subvert this nation for their own gain, or just incidentally. And that's where you start to sort of hone in on much more convincing explanations for all of the possible like data points, all of the evidence in this sort of a case. And Las Vegas is one that is just thousands and thousands and thousands of pieces of evidence.
that just never saw the light of day or never was given official scrutiny of any sort.
Well, actually, there's a resource that everyone should go look up right now. It's just a website and it's available to everyone online, and it's VegasShootingMap.com.
Okay.
VegasShootingMap.com is just a website where someone built a Google Map tool that has all of these like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of primary source data points directly linked onto a map that you can click on, and you can go to the source and you can pull it up, and it's like the original 911 call with timestamps, the original video with timestamps, the original body cam footage, the autopsy reports, and it's mapped all across the Las Vegas Strip, and it's super accessible.
Wow.
And there's a lot of the videos are broken down by time, like by the minute of when the volley is, when the first volley.
We need this for everything.
And so it makes it so that anyone can get back in it any time and go back and review the original evidence for themselves and sort of like do the base layer of investigation without all the stories and narratives and bullshit that gets laid over it. And it is an invaluable resource, and I don't know who made it, but whoever made that website is a hero of journalism, and they deserve to be commended, thanked, and rewarded, because just from that map alone, the official narrative is dead.
Right.
That single map and the evidence on it.
I don't even have to see the evidence. Just seeing the amount of activity all over the rest of the strip, it's clearly this was not one guy with one gun shooting in one location.
Right now is the concert location, the concert venue with all the shooting victims in the concert. But when you zoom all the way out to see the whole strip, you see just these huge clusters.
Whoa.
Like you were referring to the Bellagio. You can see where the Bellagio is, where those two yellow camera icons are kind of halfway up. The Bellagio is right up there, clustered underneath all those blue 911 calls. And you can listen to the 911 call audio specifically, verbatim. And you can go to the Oasis Apartments where suspicious men were watched changing clothes in the bushes. You can go to the airport where they had 911 calls coming in about the girl that had been shot and the gunman on the airport. So it allows the average citizen or the average citizen journalist to go back through the unfiltered reality from the primary source data, which is so important in these types of investigations because it gets lost in time. Right?
Yeah.
And you were there kind of working at InfoWars when this story broke. And so you got this inside look at the story as it broke, at the changing narratives, like Jose Campos, the security guard, whose timeline and story changed three different times.
Doesn't make any sense,
That kind of stuff gets washed away if you don't have preservation of primary sources. And his is just such an interesting example.
That is really great.
It's like, it's so fundamentally ridiculous. The basics of it is that the security guard is going to check on this like kind of room alert that is for a different room, and he's up on the floor as the shooting is happening. And originally, if I'm not mistaken, the story was that he went and checked on this after the shooting was already over, and then he gets shot at through the door of Stephen Paddock's room. Like a bunch of bullets come through the door and at him, he gets struck in the leg, he hides. But then they later changed the story to be that it happened. Actually, no, he was there before the shooting was happened. And he's given testimony that says he heard loud drilling sounds and all this. But then MGM was like, no, F that. You can't run with that story because then we look really bad. We look like our security guy got shot and we didn't report it and we're negligent. And so then they changed it to no, he got shot during, this happened during the shooting, 40 seconds after the shooting started. But it's like, bro, the mainstream story that you're trying to slide this kind of shifting piece of evidence into is that there was a cacophony of automatic gunfire coming from right here in the hallway. And you could hear this gunfire all across the Las Vegas Strip. You could hear it blocks away. You could allegedly hear it in every other hotel on the Strip because they're saying that all these other 911 calls were just people hearing the Mandalay Bay shooter.
Yeah.
And so you're telling me that Jose Campos doesn't remember if there was automatic gunfire going off in the hallway with him as he got shot, and he's shifting his story back and forth
and
because he doesn't remember that?
And that's just the very beginning. Then it gets into sort of the way that I think I remember MGM like set him up with.
He was going to do a whole bunch of media interviews.
Yeah.
And then right before he did all these mainstream media appearances, he just disappeared to Mexico without a trace and was just gone. And then, like you were saying, he was then trotted back out like a week or two or three later and just did an appearance on Ellen.
With a handler.
Who is sponsored by MGM, and sits down and does this really carefully controlled interview, and then gone forever.
Telling you, there's so much stuff like that. And so when it comes to like the Charlie Kirk shooting, actually, you know, a good sort of bridge over to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, the USS Liberty, that's an example where it wasn't America shot our own ship. Israel shot up our ship, but then it was the American government that was willing to cover it up. And whether we had foreknowledge or not, I think it's pretty obvious we must have because the way it was sent in. But that's sort of a perfect example of a foreign state doing something to Americans, but the American government being willing to cover it up because the political implications would have been messy if they told the truth.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, and sometimes, you know, it's that sort of thing where maybe there's a political motivation towards an ally or towards an incentive structure, money, a deal. Sometimes it's corruption, right? With JFK, it looks an awful lot like the cover up of all the parties that were involved. LBJ helped that cover up because he just personally gained and he was personally in on the plot. But then there's other times where maybe the cover up is just to cover up negligence. Maybe it's to cover up, sources and methods. Maybe it's to cover up, you know, that there were Americans involved, even if they weren't operating on American orders. It's, you know, there's all kinds of different variants of these stories. And that's the real trick of it. The real difficult part is that in the moment, like with the Charlie Kirk ongoing reporting and investigation, is I think most people don't trust the government, but there's so many directions you can take it once you don't trust the mainstream narrative, once you don't trust the lone gunman 30-06 narrative. There's a million directions you can take it, all the way from people believing that Charlie's not dead and that they used a squib and that it was all faked in order to get him into witness protection, which is like, you know, honestly, there is some evidence to support that. But then there's also a perfectly legitimate direction to go where it was, you know, people from Israel and insiders maybe like within our government that orchestrated this hit for some reason. And there's a version of a lot of stories in between, and each one has certain amounts of evidence that support it. But we have so much that's not being released, so much that's still being withheld and being obfuscated. There's lies coming out from TPUSA that are slowly getting kind of uncovered. And so until you have all the data and until you can kind of really comb through all of that together, it's really hard to hone in on which of the possible narratives or theories is most likely and true. And that's why it's so important to have a decentralized space, decentralized media, where people feel free to explore possibilities and to sort of examine the evidence with a really critical and open mind. Because one thing we know for sure is that in these instances, the government's main, primary, and only interest seems to be obfuscating every other narrative, flooding the zone with bullshit, and honing in on this is the only acceptable option. And usually they slander, they lie, they censor, they shut out anyone that will say anything else to try to shut everyone up and just let the American public hear their one preferred narrative, even when it makes absolutely no sense.
Right. But if it's the only one that's on offer, it's what people will accept. And, but then there's the danger of, like, when you start investigating the Charlie Kirk murder, you start uncovering other stuff that is also seems bad, but it's not necessarily related. So then it gets confused because they're going, well, wait, so you're accusing Erica Kirk of killing Charlie Kirk. And it's like, well, no, not really. But we're concerned about the direction TPUSA is going now that Charlie's dead. So it all gets convoluted and mixed up when really, you know, it's, there's a lot of things going on. It's not all one story. It's a lot of different stories that have a lot of overlap
often
and crisscross.
Corruption groups up, right?
Yeah.
And it's often the organizations that are involved in these kinds of tragedies or really crazy stories, often it's because they're already corrupt and they're already tangled up in some really weird shit. And, you know, if you were to ask me 1 year ago what organizations in America are highly likely candidates to be involved in some sort of corrupt, underhanded political dealings, TPUSA would be right at the top of that list. It's a massive, complex corporate structure of tax-exempt organization. Sounds an awful lot like the Bill and Hillary Clinton Foundation or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, these sorts of charities where you can hide money flowing in and out. It's in Arizona, one of the most corrupt states in our nation, border state. A lot of reasons why you might look at TPUSA and say, you know, this is kind of shady in the first place, and that doesn't necessarily lead to, okay, assassination of the leader makes sense. But once you overlap that assassination into this sort of already kind of sketchy spot, a lot of times there's other stories kind of overlaying, and you have to try to sift them all out and pull them all apart and figure out what's exactly true.
Right, because at the same time, there could be things that are would otherwise seem innocuous, but in the context of an assassination is like, well, now this takes on a bigger concern. Man, we could go on for hours. You're doing a live stream at 8 o'clock tonight. That'll be on YouTube at Ian Carroll Show. You can follow Ian on X at Ian Carroll Show, cancelIanCarroll.com, and, of course, the Buyer app, buyerapp.com. That's B-U-Y-R. Incredible stuff. Thanks so much for being here with us.
Thanks, sir.
My pleasure. Have a good weekend.
I didn't plug last hour because I've been so focused on the news. If I don't plug, we won't be here because I'm not funded by the Qataris or the Israelis or the Russians or the Jews or the Easter bunnies. I am funded by you. So I'm going to sell you products that really work so you want them. Now, we got two different flavors, Fruit Punch and then Freedom Mango. I didn't name this. It's a very, it looks like a firecracker. It's a beautiful cover. Ultimate power. How about unlimited power? And for poverty. But it really is a pre-workout, post-workout, Turbo Force 2.0. I mean, this is seriously powerful. super high quality. Everything it does for your body is next level. Ignites mental clarity and focus, cleans, sustained energy, enhance blood flow and endurance, supports daily cognitive function. L-citrulline converts to L-arginine. Don't know what that does. We got the best formula of it. It's amazing. L-theanine. Relax, wake up, clarity and focus. Natural caffeine from coffee concentrated. Vitamin B12, the highest quality, B6, and more. This is really strong. If you love Turbo Force, you're going to love Ultimate Power. We should call it Unlimited Power. I've never popped it on the cover. The point is that it funds the operation. I said, hey, we need a clone of this product, or make it better, for their store. And they said, okay, this is what they came out with. I've been on them for a year to do this. It's really strong. Tiny little scoop. This thing, by the way, is heavy. This is like a whole bunch of servings, like a couple months worth. So get yours now. I like the fruit punch flavor. And by the way, today's though one of the last days where you can get 60% off on Ultramethylene Blue, Irish Sea Moss, Shilajit, and more at TheAlexShowStore.com. Thanks for your support. Hour number 4 straight ahead.